Good morning. Director Abondi, how are you this morning?
Mr. Chairman, well, thank you.
Good. Welcome you and your staff to the Appropriations Committee. What we've our game plan, if, and you have a pretty straightforward budget. I know we'll be getting a bill at some point in the session on projects. So if you have some opening comments and then take us through your budget page by page, obviously we'll, I'm sure we'll talk about Gillette and Madison and the AMLs and that kind of those issues. But so the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Let me introduce staff members that are with me here this morning. Andrea Odell is the financial officer at Water Development, and then Brian Clerkin is our new construction division manager, and he is also the project manager for the Gillette Madison project. So to the extent you have questions with regards to Gillette, Brian is certainly here, and if I can't answer the questions, then Brian can back me up certainly. So what I thought I might do this morning is just do a quick review of our standard budget request, talk about the exception items that we have. We have four of those, and we'll visit about that. And then I want to walk you through where we're in Gillette, at least from a financial perspective, because one of our exception requests is a $25 million request for Gillette. So with that, probably we have provided as part of your packet a one-page summary of our standard budget, and it lists three exception items. That's probably the easiest way to follow along, but within our budget document, the standard budget starts on page 14. It has a detailed listing of all of the items within our budget, but is everybody there at least on this?
Mr. Chairman?
Summary page.
I think we want to direct. Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, before we get in that, would you give us a kind of an update where what you see with the moisture in Wyoming, what it's looking like, what you know, all these early storms, what's the water situation looks like, and kind of what, you know, from 40,000 feet, as best you can, tell us what you think's going on where we are.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebot. We've actually been blessed, I think, this fall, as everybody's aware of, with pretty decent precipitation. The last NRCS report on snowpack showed, I think, the statewide average at about 120%. That has been coming down over the last month or so. I think it was upwards around of 140% earlier. Early season snowpack numbers are often not reliable in terms of what the long-term future will be, because our big snow months are March and April. But comparing 120% snowpack statewide compared to, I believe it was about 80% last year, is very encouraging, certainly. I can tell you with regards to our weather modification project in the Sierra Madres and Medicine Bows, we've had two cases. Cases being where they've actually seeded, and then the scientists can go out and determine whether, in fact, additional precipitation resulted from that seeding event. So we've had two of those. We will be looking to hopefully end up with 30 cases this season. So I would have thought we'd have had a few more with the storms we've had, but we haven't. That's where we're at. But generally that snowpack is above average in most areas of the state. So I think we're in pretty good shape thus far. Keep your fingers crossed for more snow, though.
Okay.
So does everybody have this page?
It's in your packet, I think.
But it's not on our SharePoint?
It was provided. Okay. Well, if
it's about
if
the fifth page, sixth page or so. In the big, thick packet, it's about the sixth, seventh page. Is this it?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
You're looking at some fiscal years.
It has a side-by-side comparison of our 2013 biennium as well as the proposed 15 biennium budget.
Okay. I think, does everybody have it? Okay.
All right.
And I just, one other thing, Director, Representative Wallace and Co-Chairman Bebout, right? You guys have this budget on the floor of your respective houses, so We want to make sure they have all their questions answered, certainly, before we leave today. So, okay.
All right, well, we put this summary sheet together just to show a comparison between the 13 and 15 budget, and I'll just walk down the various series. Series 100, Personnel Services, the request in the before you is slightly less than the 2013 biennium. That's largely due to some retirements that we've had that have we've replaced them with people that at a slightly lesser wage. But in essence, a flat request there. Supportive Services, Series 200, that is flat. Our request this year is exactly what we had made in the previous biennium. Series 300, called Restrictive Services, I call that cost allocation. A slight increase there from $214,000, the new request $226,973. That, of course, is not driven by the agency, but the costs or services provided by other agencies to water development. Series 400, Central Data Services, there's been a significant decrease there from $117,000 to $66,003. Within that $66,000 number is exception request number four from ETS in the amount of $24,840. And we're not, as the agency, party to the generation of that particular number, but I know that our servers, we will be going from state servers to the cloud,
sure.
And I think that at least that exception request is tied to that. Overall, though, a net decrease. Series 500, which is the rental on our building, that budget number is dropping from $769,000 to $658,000, $720,000. There's not been a decrease in our lease rate this year, and that leasing is handled through A&I. What I can tell you is the $658, $720 number is the actual lease payments that we make. And so in previous budgets, we've had more dollars allocated. We've not spent those dollars. But it now, I think, more closely reflects the actual lease payment. And then finally, under contractual services, that one is a slight decrease in the amount, new request, $1,029,618. That's a decrease of about $31,000. And within the budget document, that decrease is reflected in exception request number three. And if I can.
Okay. On page 12, I see that.
I'm actually looking at page 17 in my budget document, which details exception request. Actually, start.
I'm on page.
Wait a minute.
What do you have?
Oh, I'm on the wrong page.
I hope our budgets are numbered the same.
Yeah.
I'm looking.
Page
31,000 in decrease. On page 12, priority number three.
Well, I wanted to get to what is actually in that 900 series. And if you go to page 9 of your budget document, at the very bottom, it details professional services. $6,000 in professional fees. $250,000 for water-related research, and I'm on page 10 now.
Yeah, we are too, I think.
Okay. And kind of describing this in a little more detail for you, when we have in-stream flow requests from the game and fish that flow to water development, we're obligated by statute to conduct hydrologic analyses to determine if water is available for that in-stream flow request. So we use those dollars for outside contracting. We also will update river basin plans. And some of those we do in-house if we think it's a simple analysis. We will contract, for example, with the Wyoming Geological Survey for some work. We will contract with the USGS for certain aspects in that. So all of that would come out of this Series 900. And then lastly, the Water Resources Data System, which is where the exception request is coming from, a $31,000 decrease. The WRDS system is housed on the University of Wyoming campus. They provide the website services for the agency. They also are designated as the water rights data clearinghouse for the state. So all of the water development studies that we do are sent to them. They are posted on their website. They also collect significant groundwater, surface water, climate data, and maintain, in essence, what is the state's water library as well. And so it, my agency's funding goes to support that operation in the amount of, their budget was an $800,000 request, but it was slightly less than what it was the previous biennium, and that's what generated then exception request number three.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, let's talk a little bit about the in-stream flow, $250,000. And that statute, Harry, is that a, I guess I should have looked it up, but what happens if there's six applications? What drives the applications, the number? And are we obligated, whatever Game and Fish comes to you with, are we obligated to provide the money?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, the way that's worked, the requests come from Game and Fish. They have a process that includes some public input in what segments might be considered for in-stream flow. They then bring their request to us, and with that request is a biological assessment of the stream segments, and then we take it from there and do, as I mentioned, the hydrologic analysis. We have been moving forward with those requests in terms of conducting the analyses.
Yeah, I guess, Mr. Chairman, I have concerns about in-stream flow and in a lot of ways, and I want to know what's driving this. And obviously, the Game and Fish, there'll be a question that I'll be asking them about it as well. But what you're saying is whatever they bring to you, you're obligated to provide this service because of the statute. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. Yeah, we'll look into that, and I want to look into that a little bit more. And this has been going on. And the other thing is maybe you could provide some data in the last couple of bienniums, how much money we did in this arena and how many in-stream flow requests that we processed and some of those things, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure we're clear. Not all of that $250,000 is allocated to in-stream flow studies. A portion goes to that. A portion in the past has been used for river basin plan updates as well.
Yeah, and so. Mr. Chairman, so tell us the split, too, please.
Okay. So that, Mr. Chairman, that is a quick walkthrough of our standard budget request. The total numbers, as you see on that page that we brought to you, a decrease of about $100,000 from the previous biennium. So the total standard budget request, $8,017,462, and that does represent or include exception requests 2, 3, and 4. And so, and I'm trying not to confuse you here, but exceptions requests 3 and 4, I think, are fairly standard. Well, let me maybe
just... Why don't we just start right on, I think they begin on, the standard budget ends on top of page 11.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, before we go on to there.
Yeah, Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. I just have a question about the Water Resources Data System. And I'm curious, Harry, how do they come up with that figure? I mean, do you have a breakdown of the services they're providing, or is it part of computer software? Is it how do we come up with $800,000?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that request comes from the words they have a staff of five employees. That is also going to maintain servers, software, and what the university provides is housing for that facility. So we ask them to prepare a budget request much like we prepare for you. And so based on that request, then we include that or embed that in our budget.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is for four employees, and you've got a budget request like we have before you put it in here and approve it. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Five employees. I misspoke.
Okay. I have, Director, I have then, so your standard budget ends at top page 11, and then we start with exception requests. Is that what you have?
Yes.
You want to just take us in? You kind of explained them, but we'll just go through them one by one here so folks need to take notes.
Okay. And we start with, on this page, it will be exception section 3. First one is priority number 2, and priority number 1 is the Gillette Madison project, and that's later on in the budget. So with regards to our standard budget and exception request thereof, first one is for replacement of all of our computer systems, printers, and a plotter that we have in the agency. That equipment, come this July, will be of the age of 4 to 10 years old. And our agency is small enough that what we do is we go through and replace all of the equipment at the same time. That request, as has been vetted with ETS, is for $85,484. And I'll just give you a little anecdotal story there. Our plotter, which is being maintained by ETS, the last time they were out and looked at it, and it's one of the older pieces of equipment, I think it's 7 or 8 years old, their response to us, because it's getting trouble to get parts on that, they said, we can fix it this time, but the next time we won't be able to fix it. So we're hoping you approve this request.
Mr. Chairman. Harriet, with this, you said, are you replacing all of your computers and laptops?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, yes.
And is there a reason why, Mr. Chairman, that you don't replace half of them, or the oldest ones, or the ones that need it the most, as opposed to doing it in one punch, other than the fact that ETS, you fit within their guidelines?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, as I understand the ETS guidelines, it is a replacement cycle of about 4 years, and all of our equipment will qualify in that regards. If we split it in half, then what we will be looking at is equipment that will be 6 years old before the end of the next biennium, and that's well beyond the useful life as determined by ETS. And I came from a larger agency where it was a phased approach. In Water Development's case, where we have 25 employees, we just replace them all at the same time.
So
that's the proposal.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The we've gotten... Almost every agency is getting their request for computer changes because of the ETS recommendations. But it seems to me it's based upon a guideline instead of going out and looking at the need of, because some computers use a lot, some you don't. Some are used just primarily for word processing and letter sending, and those can last 10 years. I mean, my laptop at home is 12 years old, and I still use it. And my computer at the office is 6 years old. So merely because ETS recommends it to me does not necessarily justify replacing every computer. And so to me it ought to be on a needs basis and a production basis as opposed to merely saying we can replace them because we get to. So if we cut this in half, then you'd have to just come back on a supplemental if you needed to if something was breaking down. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that can certainly be an approach.
Okay. Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Harry, have you considered, I know you've went electronic for me and some of the others on the committee, your department produces reams and reams of paper for the board. Have you ever considered looking into iPads or something for your board to eliminate some of the paperwork involved in the process? I know it's not in your budget request, but it seems to me that might be a good idea to look down the road in that direction.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, that's a discussion that we've not had with the commission. I can tell you that a number of those commission members function in a paper world, as do I to a certain extent. I think that's something we have discussed, at least internally, but at this point in time, we've not offered that to them, or they've not come to us with that request. And so our communications with our commission members tend to be through email and their personal equipment. And we, because they meet six times a year, we've not gone to the point of offering them state equipment with regards to that. We can certainly consider that in the future.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chairman, if I
yeah.
could. I know you're sending out all your packets early on email so they can review their work before they get to their meetings, so they already have all that documentation electronically. I would just suggest that you look into that.
Okay.
Any other questions? I think we're good. Okay, Director.
All right. Mr. Chairman, next. Then exception request three is the Water Resources Data System. Again, that is a $31,000 decrease from the current budget. And I have explained at least the services they provide to us.
Okay.
I would encourage...
Co-chair?
No, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Next is number four.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, before we leave number three, okay. I would just encourage you, if you have an opportunity... if you go to Water Development's website, there is a link then to under reports, and that will send you to their website. And take a look at their website, because I think there's a lot of water-related information that's available through that particular website.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
This has been in place for many, many years, this relationship with the College of Engineering and Wyoming Water Development. And the number that we've allocated has been pretty consistent. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, that is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And then number...
number four...
Four is the move into cloud storage.
Mr.
We've seen that one on other agencies.
Yes.
I think you explained that. Any questions? Okay.
And that, Mr. Chairman, then will bring us to the Gillette Madison project, which is our priority number one. And so on page 17 of the budget book starts the description of just the first two or three paragraphs talk about kind of the origin of the project. At the bottom of that page, you can see a general summary of that project, 26 miles of 36-inch pipe, 16 miles of 42-inch. Five new Madison wells, and then the associated piping and disinfection storage facilities that go along with that. That total project cost or budget is $217 million. On the next page, you see the funding sources for this project, and for those members who might not be aware of how this has been funded, originally, City of Gillette came to the Water Development Program with their request to fund the project. The size of this project made it beyond the scope of Water Development's financial capability, and so there have been now direct appropriations since 2009 on this project. And you can see second column shows the grant funds. Been a combination of budget reserve account. There was one appropriation from Water Development Account 3, the amount of about $16 million. And then more recently, AML funding has been provided for the grant side. They do have some loans that have been granted through the Permanent Mineral Trust. And the last year's loan request and this year's loan request have been... They've not been made from the City of Gillette because they've used special purpose tax revenues that were passed by that county. And so to date, what you see is $120 million in grant funds appropriated and $44 million in loan dollars. That is a 67% grant, 33% local share formula, which is how we fund all other Water Development Commission projects, or most other, I should say. And it's my understanding that Gillette and Campbell County, in their special purpose tax appropriation, will intend to basically use that to repay the loans as we go forward. But the existing loans that have been appropriated were prior to that special purpose tax. So that's where we are today. The
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back in 2010, we appropriated $16,415,000 out of water account three, and at that time, the what I consider to be the commitment of the legislature was that we would refill that account in the following biennium, and as far as I know, that has never happened.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
If we were to fulfill that commitment this go-around, would it go back to that same Water 3 account? Is that the best place for it to go?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, that would be my recommendation to you, that we basically go back to the account of origin for that funding.
Director, now Water 3 is kind of a new creation, relatively new, and we created that really with general funds, didn't we, 10 years ago?
A little less than 10 years ago, there was an appropriation from Water Development Account 1 into that account, and...
But we've made general fund appropriations into Water 3, haven't we, over the years?
Mr. Chairman, we have.
Mr. Co-Chair.
I'm pretty sure we have. I don't know the amount, but...
Yeah, do you have those amounts just to educate us a little bit?
Mr. Chairman, on Water Development Account 3, it was started with about $82.5 million from the budget reserve account, and we had a diversion from it in 2009, and also then another transfer in from Water Development Account 1, about $54 million.
When you say the diversion in 2009, what was that?
I believe that was when it was something with when the budget, the governor came in and took about $22 million. From Water Development Account 3.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Representative Wallace and then Mr. Kocher.
Would you, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, would you kind of give us a quick overview of what the purpose of that Water Account 3 is and what some of the anticipated, why we put that together and what we've got coming down the pipe that might be coming out of that account?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, Water Development Account 3 was created under Governor Friedenthal's administration, and its intent was to provide a special focus for dams and reservoirs. We've always had a focus of dams and reservoirs since the beginning of the program, but by creating a separate Account 3 then with its own dedicated funding, the hope was that we can move reservoir projects, or it's dedicated just for dams and reservoirs. The definition of dams and reservoirs are new reservoirs of 2,000 acre feet in size or larger, or enlargements of existing reservoirs of 1,000 acre feet or larger. So that's, you have to qualify there in order to be funded out of that account. We fund smaller reservoirs, but they will come out of either account one or two, as the case may be. We have right now about a dozen projects that we're working on. Most of those projects are in some stage of level two, so feasibility study analysis. That can also include design and permitting. I will be providing to the Select Water Committee as part of the upcoming legislative session an estimate sheet if we were to build out or ultimately go to construction for those dozen or so projects, and that estimate now is somewhere on the order of $330 million. I can tell you the projects that we have that are moving forward and I think are poised to go, they're either in design or permitting or ready to go there. Right now they're totaling about $80 million in value. And those are ones that we're reasonably certain we're going to be able to move forward to construction. But if we were to build everything out, we have an excess of $300 million in projects.
Co-Chair, did you have...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Would you please provide, Harry, the when the money went into Water Development of 3, where it came from, the budget reserve account, the $22 million that you mentioned. I know the $16.5 million when that happened. And then also, would you provide, or maybe you know, the balance of our three accounts, 1, 2, and 3, if you could either provide that to us, or is that... I tried to find it in here and in your budget documents, and I didn't see it. Is it in there? I don't think it is.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebutt, I don't believe it is. I can give you, we'd be happy to restate that in something in writing to you, but I can give you the estimated balances through the next biennium. That those are dollar, or those are balances we're working with on our current set of projects. I can give those to you right now.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, where we are at the end of this biennium, and then you're going to give me what you're saying at the end of the next biennium, what the balances will be, is what you're... Mm-hmm. Okay, please do.
So at least for project purposes, this would be projected through the end of the 15 biennium, and that's with no projects expended out of the next biennium, but that fund balance is for water development account 1, $70 million in round numbers. Account 2, which is rehabilitation projects, $18 million. And then account 3, dams and reservoirs, $131 million.
Mr. Chairman, in terms of the need you're seeing, I know Senator Meyer is on Select Water, maybe some other House members. President Moniz are on Select Water. One of the areas that I think that we need to be looking at, and I'm talking about the funding side, is Water Development Account 2, the maintenance component. How are we doing in terms of trying to keep up with our irrigation districts and maintenance? And to me, that's a really good area to spend money, because it's so cost beneficial to go into areas where we have such leakage and loss and with the canals, et cetera. How are we doing in that account?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, that projected account balance, as I mentioned, for account two is just over $18 million. The slate of projects that we are moving forward right now, and you will see in the upcoming legislative session, total $9,274,000. So about half of that, which is from a planning standpoint, is about where we want to be. So we would be able to fund $9 million in the 2014 session, and then in the 2015 session, we would have about $9 million available as well. So at least right now, we seem on target with that fund. However, we could receive more projects in the upcoming cycle that certainly would create a deficit in terms of funding there.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's my next question is, what are the requests? Are you only seeing $9 million for this first half, is what you're saying, and that's all the requests that you have?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the recommendation coming forward from the Water Development Commission is to fund all of the requests that we received this fall.
Harry, just real quick on your severance tax diversion and your repayments, how fast, what's your yearly refill on these, replenishment? What's your income on these? I know that's probably all on the goldenrod. I could probably look, but I don't have it handy right in front of me. And then I think Representative Wallace has another follow-up, and then I think Senator Meyer has a question.
Mr. Chairman, okay, I will give you the numbers for all three of accounts. This is anticipated revenue into account number one. This would include the severance tax distribution, interest on that account, as well as when we have loans that are repaid, those payments go back into there. So right now on account one, we anticipate about $27 million per year going into that account.
Okay.
And that $70 million balance that I gave you included 2 years of anticipated revenue into that, just so you know what that meant. Okay. Account two, that anticipated revenue is $6.1 million per year. So with regards to this year's projects, we have $9 million worth of projects coming forward. But our account balance is such that we're able to handle that, I think, easily this year.
Okay.
In account three, the anticipated revenue is approximately $3 million per year.
Okay. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to the diversions that were out. The one we know about, the 2009 diversion, what was that amount?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, that was $22,250,000.
And Mr. Chairman, was that amount ever repaid into the Water 3 account?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer, I think, had a question.
Harry, there's one project coming down the pike that doesn't really kind of hit any of our definitions, and that's that it's really in its infancy, gleaming the eye of a couple of folks, and that's that Fontanelle project that's essentially could be a tens of millions of dollars, if not more. Doesn't necessarily shoehorn into any of ours. Could you talk to the committee a little bit about that project so they know that it might be coming down the road in a year or two?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Myers, we had a request to look at the feasibility of building a pipeline from Fontanelle Reservoir south approximately 30 to 40 miles. It did not come in the form of a bona fide application from a qualified entity. It came from a couple of private individuals. They felt there were state benefits for this type of project in terms of using Wyoming's allocation under the Upper Colorado River Compact out of the Green River. They felt that it was a worthwhile project in terms of being able to bring new lands into production. One of the individuals actually is currently pumping water from the Green River and raising, as I've been told, a fairly good crop of alfalfa. So that's the concept behind the project, is to bring more lands into production, as well as providing of water for municipalities or industrial users, as the case may be. The benefits of the project is that if you take, if you take water out of Fontanelle, you have a better water quality opposed to letting it flow down the Green River and then pumping out of it. There's also at least the idea that by taking it out of Fontanelle, we will have pressurized water opposed to having to pump that. So those are the kind of the benefits in the proposal. What we're going to be doing with this project going forward is we're not going to conduct our standard feasibility study where we hire a consultant to look at that, because we don't have a bona fide application from them. Instead, what we are going to do is an in-house review. It will be more of a preliminary feasibility study. It will be done with Water Development Commission staff, and we'll be able to produce that report and really kind of answer a question, is the feasibility of this project worthwhile for the state to pursue? And that's where that project is.
Okay, Senator Meyer.
You know, one of the things that we have to realize is that we've got a lot of water under that Colorado compact, and it's necessarily we're not utilizing it to a beneficial use. And so at some point in time, we know that our neighbors to the south of us, you know, they've got their eye on it, and they've I can remember times when I've gone to ALEC meetings and other meetings, there's always been resolutions by California or other downstream states to say, well, it's time to reopen this, and for those downstream states that are using that water to take it back. So, you know, it's always one of those things that's out there. This is one of the projects that might possibly address some beneficial use to some of those waters. So, you know, it's something we better start paying a little more attention to, because it's going to come to a head here probably in the drought situation sooner rather than later. So that's, I think, why the committee felt that Harry was certainly appropriate in trying to do that in-house review to see whether or not it can cross some of the things off the list that has to happen.
Mr. Chairman?
Hey. Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, a little more follow-up. Director, a little more explanation of how that works, where it's private individuals. And then if we could, specifically, what ag areas and what municipalities would it help?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstader, the municipalities that we're talking about will be, in essence, Green River Rock Springs, which are a single system. They currently have existing water rights out of the Green River. They pump water. As this proposal was brought forth, the question was raised, would they benefit from better water quality delivered? Because we haven't really started the study, we don't know whether they'll be interested or not, but that was one of the potential water users. With regards to the ag land, what we're talking about currently are private lands, and so right now we're focused on the feasibility of this project, but the question will have to be, is there a qualified entity that would ultimately receive the grant loan support if this project were to go forward? Right now, that entity has not been identified or created from that matter. So they could form, for example, an irrigation district, which then would be a qualified entity. But and the lands that we're talking about are within that checkerboard area along the Union Pacific route. They're north of the UP, as I understand it, but again, it's a mix of private versus public lands in the checkerboard.
Mr. Chairman? Director, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Harry, we have under the Fontenelle, there's an agreement we have, I believe, with the Department or the Bureau of Rec, and we buy water every year, and we pay for that. And the question is, I think that's in water development account one. Where does the money come for that? How many acre feet do we have that we're paying for every year, and how much is the amount?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, we have a contract with the Bureau of Reclamation in Fontenelle, which gives us access to 120,000 acre feet of space in that reservoir. That's water that in turn Wyoming can contract with other entities, and in fact we have contracts with several industrial users. They use that as, I would characterize it as insurance. While they have direct flow water rights out of the Green River, in the event they were not, or there was not available water for under their direct flow right, then they would have access to the storage. They've not actually used storage water at this point in time, but we do have a fair amount of that water under contract.
Mr. Chairman, how much is the contract? What do we pay every year? And what account does it come from?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, the arrangement we have with the Bureau on Fontenelle is not unique. We have similar arrangements with Buffalo Bill, Pathfinder, Glendale Reservoir, and even Palisades Reservoir. And for each of those reservoirs, what we have done in the past is set up debt service accounts. And those are outside of the accounts 1, 2, and 3. They're managed separately. And there were appropriations that were made into each of those accounts when we started. The hope with regards to debt service is that any payments we collect for selling of water will then offset the O&M costs. Specifically for Fontenelle Reservoir,
Mr. Chairman, I'll make it easy. Just provide that information to us and include all the other dams where we have that agreement, if you would, please.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, we'll be happy to provide that information. I can tell you, I'm looking at the debt service spreadsheet here. In 2012, we made a payment of about $575,000 to the Bureau of Reclamation for that space.
And how much did we receive in terms of revenues to offset that? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's good.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the three largest payments there. They total about $500,000.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Meyer brings up an excellent point. I've been reading about the Colorado River as well, and there's some good articles, Kurt, about that. And I think there's going to be more and more pressure. And you, if you look at the way it's appropriated now and the usage, and we've had some high years, and you look at the low years we're having, it's over-appropriated by the tune of, I think, 1 million or 2 million acre feet. And I think that we have a right in the Green River of about, and you know this better than I, but it seems to me it's 500,000 a million acre feet. So any kind of development we can do in that area, I think, only helps us. Mr. Chairman, the other thing I wanted to ask Harry to provide to us, too, is there's some activities going on that are really interesting in Fremont County with the reservation boundaries and things that I don't like at all. I'm very concerned about. What I want to have you provide to us, if you would, please, is the amount of commitment the state of Wyoming has made to the reservation in terms of water development funds over the years. And I can remember some big accounts in 88, 89, 90. We've tried to help with rehabilitation, a lot of different things. So could you provide that data to me, please?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay. Any other questions? I think we'll get back on Gillette Madison unless we have any other. Go ahead. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we mentioned it earlier on, but the kind of anticipated amount that we might be looking at, I know it's early in the process, if we were to go forward with this Fontenelle project, what was that amount?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, I do not have a good number to provide to you. That's part of why we want to do this in-house feasibility study. I can tell you it will be in the millions of dollars. Because we're not talking about a 6-inch pipeline. We're talking about a rather large pipeline. We have the issue of crossing federal land, so there will certainly be an EIS involved in that kind of project. So it's a significant water development project. But first step is to take a look at it and see whether or not it is truly a feasible project.
You know, Director, I think, and I was in the legislature when I created Water 3, and the dream was to build some large dams, mm-hmm. and it's just so difficult. And so I don't know. Maybe we need to reassess or rethink, but, be multiple lifetimes and multiple changes in administrations. But anyway, that's an editorial comment. But any other questions, Fontenelle, or any other issues? We'll get back to Gillette Madison on the budget.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, one more. Senator Perkins.
Now, I'm just curious, as before we leave the kind of the brief discussion on Water 3, I mean, ultimately, we've also looked over the years at have we considered, changing that tack when the reservoirs, certainly the surface reservoirs are seem to be very problematic, but the there's subsurface reservoirs that, and we can find those geologically detached formations of water that are fairly significant. We've got the Madison here. I know that there are some out southwest of Pathfinder Reservoir and some other things like that. I mean, ultimately, are we looking towards maybe modifying that and looking for other potentially available underground water reservoirs that can be developed as under Water 3 as opposed to just the surface?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, to date, we have not looked at any projects that would involve subsurface storage. There, we have funded a couple of projects for aquifer recharge, which is similar, but in terms of actually storing that water, it depends certainly on the geologic conditions and the need, and we go from there, from location. We've been mainly focused, or have been focused, on surface reservoirs. And I would say, while we may not have any real large reservoirs, the program has focused on smaller facilities because they are easier to permit, and that's the way we've been proceeding.
Okay. Senator Meyer.
And, Harry, won't you agree that we're going to have some clarification in some of our water statutes to really look at the interconnections as far as if we go into underground storage, mm-hmm. It's not really clear. It's a little, there's some ambiguity in some of the statutes that we may have to do some work there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Myers, I think that's correct, but prior to getting to the statutory issues, you have to recognize that in other states where they've done this, there is the issue of leakage out of those facilities. Those geologic formations are not necessarily a real tight formation. So where it's been done, in fact, I've looked at some projects in Arizona where when entities put water into the ground for future use or withdrawal, there's a period of time like 1 year where they're able to withdraw 75% of that amount, and then if they wait 2 years, it's a diminishing return in terms of those kinds of aquifer storage projects. Now, if you talk about deep geologic settings where they store natural gas, for example, then it might be a tighter formation. But everything that I've looked at or read about tends to be more of a shallower type of arrangement where the, you put the water in the ground, it's moving. It's going to move away from that source, although you may recharge the aquifer. So that can be funded out of our program. Like I said, we've looked at a couple of studies, but those communities have not moved forward with those projects.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess for your information, a few of us were able to take a trip out to California, and they have one of those aquifer recharge systems. And it's really amazing the cooperation between the agricultural interests, the environmental interests, and the cities in California, where they really have a holistic approach of managing their water. And there was one area where they poured several hundred thousand acre feet of water over at an area that was really conducive to putting water in the ground, and that lasted them for quite a few years. During that wet year, they were able to keep things really working. So there's a way, I think, to really manage your water conjunctively in a lot more efficient manner, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot more understanding than we have right now. So, it's more than a one-year interim study, I think. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, any other questions? We'll get back on. I think we're on page 17, 18. You were just talking about some of the descriptions at the bottom of 17. I had a question just when you had the bottom of page 17 on the Madison, five new Madison wells, and I know we've had a discussion of the cost of those wells, and then an additional five wells. Is that part of the project cost, too, or is that going to come to us later?
Mr. Chairman, this project, totaling $217 million, anticipates five new wells. But the well field that's being developed, which is separate from the existing Madison well field, we believe has the potential for an additional five wells beyond that. And so the concept is, as Gillette grows and needs additional water, they would drill upwards of five additional wells, total of 10 in this new well field.
Great. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubbs.
And just to follow up on that, and then I'm assuming then the project design, the pipeline capacity, and everything anticipates that future expansion.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubbs, that is correct. The piping facilities are designed for the 10 wells. Five are going into as part of this project.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many wells have actually been drilled?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, let me clarify, is part of this project?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Two wells have been drilled to date.
Okay, and then we administer that, we being Water Development, right? We have contract oversight?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, yes.
Okay, did we bid the three additional wells? Have that been bid?
They have not been bid.
Okay, and when will they be bid? Next spring, probably? And you've got $9.5 million for three wells, and so could you provide the information to the committee what the previous two wells cost? I'm just curious. You say November of 13, that's why.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, I'd be happy to provide that information. And actually, in your handout, there's a schedule that we can get to, but anticipated target bid date was November of this year, but they have not been bid yet.
Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, we've talked about 17 and 18 deals with existing funding. If you turn to page 19 at the top of the page, is Gillette's request for funding this year, $25,792,000 in the form of a grant. That's a 67% grant. They would then match that with $12,703,000 and some change, which will come from their special purpose tax. That is the last and final request for this project. At that point, they will have all of their funding together in the amount of $217 million, $217,600,000. Now, going on, we've provided to you as one of the handouts a letter from Gillette, which was making their request for the final $25 million grant payment. And the second page then of a handout, which looks like this, is our financial analysis of where that project is at. And I'd like to just quickly walk you through that. It's titled Wyoming Water Development Office Gillette Madison Pipeline Project Status as of September 4th, 2013. Everybody found that page?
Yep.
Okay. The first part of that shows the existing funding that has been appropriated, totaling $179 million. The second three figures shows the active account that has been set up for Gillette. And these dollars, as they're appropriated, we are not moving those into the account until they're needed. So currently, we've moved $67,533,000 into that Gillette account. They have expenditures of $51 million and some change. There's a cash balance in that account. That's not all that important with regards to the financial analysis. If you then go down...
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubbs.
Sorry to interrupt. Mr. Labonte, you said it's not moved into that account until it's needed. Where is it held in the interim before you move it into that account?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, it is held in the account of origin. So, for example, Permanent Mineral Trust, if it's a loan, AML funding is retained actually by the federal government, and we have to request payments from Gillette to Water Development to DEQ to the federal government to withdraw the AML funds. So we've set up this cash account then so that we made sure we have cash flow on the construction projects.
Okay.
And incidentally, then, the interest that is retained on some of those accounts and the interest is accruing to the accounts in their account of origin.
Okay.
So in the middle of the page, and you see three figures that are colored there, work currently under contract through fiscal year 13, so as of last June, totaled $63 million. Their planned contract awards in fiscal year 14, so our current fiscal year, total $87 million. And I can tell you that right now, tentatively, they're looking at a bid package in January for a lot of their piping or the remaining piping that is estimated at about $50 million. So there's some big contracts that are about ready to move forward. And then the remaining contracts for fiscal year 15 total $56,370,000. The point in showing you that is that before Gillette can move forward and accept bids on the bid packages, they have to have the money secured. And so while they have not necessarily expended a lot of dollars, they currently have a fair amount of work under contract. And as these big packages move forward in this year and then next fiscal year, they most definitely will need the full $217 million funding package.
So, Director, and looking at the request and the governor's of $12.4 million AML, and I think those are the release time on those are like in 15. Or is that going to time up all right? Have you talked to the governor about that? Going to work?
Mr. Chairman, I've not spoken specifically to the governor about timing, but we showed the governor this exact cash flow analysis, and that's why they need the last dollars now. That will make those dollars available in fiscal year 15, about 6 months from now, and they will be able to adequately cash flow the project.
So, Don, when do those AML funds, when are those going to be available?
Mr. Chairman, the $12 million included in the governor's recommendation, the earliest they will be available for application to the federal government is December of 2014, with payment generally 6 to 12 months after that point.
So is that going to, a year from now, application, and then anywhere from 6 months to another year, that'd be December 15, right? At the latest, probably. So hopefully spring of 15, spring, summer, fall of 15, be able to actually receive them.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, The last page in your package that we provided is a schedule with the various bid packages, and that's color-coded based on fiscal year of the target bid date. And you can see the last three projects starting in July 14 through September 14, they total $54 million. What I will tell you is when you look at this schedule, a number of these bid dates have slipped, and so I believe that that schedule for the $12 million on AML will work for the community.
So those bid dates that you have, July, September, September, 14, we won't have the application will be ready in a year from now, mm-hmm. 14, so they would have to have slipped. And then make the application. Would you make the application, Don, after on the bid amounts, or how does that work, or just for the project itself, just the total amount?
Mr. Chairman, the application to OSM would be on the total amount.
Yeah.
And then the reimbursement would come at a future.
Come do that. So, and looking when you'd have to actually, looks like it'd probably work then, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get asked that question. I mean, that's floating around already okay. about how you obligate these. Will it time up? Will it even work? Should we do it? Does it look bad? All those things are out there. And so we're trying to learn as much as we can. To
Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions on that, members? Okay.
Mr. Thanks. Chairman, just a comment there. In terms of the timing, one, I think some of these bid dates are slipping, okay, number one. Two, from Gillette's perspective in terms of awarding the contract, they're just going to want to know that the funding commitment has been made. So I think with action in this budget, that will be taken care of. And then we get into the actual cash flow issue. And, you know, most of those projects there, those last three projects, you know, take 60 days to award contract. You start getting materials. Those are spring of 2015 type construction projects. So I think timing-wise it will work out well.
Okay. Senator Perkins.
Just one quick question on the contingency inflation allowance of $10 million. To the extent that's not used, does that revert to the state? Does that revert to the county and their cap tax, or is it divided in the same proportion in which the project, the two-thirds, one-third contribution from Correct. The state and the county?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, that would revert based on the funding percentage, 67% to state sources, 33% local.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Wallace?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These sheets that you have in this packet, have you already, or if not, could you please provide them to our staff so that we can get them loaded on our electronic system and have them available? Are they there? I never found them, so where'd you find them?
An iPad?
Yeah.
There you go.
They're not on no. Surface Pro, but
I don't
on
know.
iPad?
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
I didn't get that.
Okay, any other questions? Okay. What else do you have for us, Director? That about wraps it up, doesn't it?
Mr. Chairman, I think we're pretty close. What I will tell you is kind of deviating a little bit from at least our agency budget is with regards to projects coming forward to you in the omnibus planning and construction bills, which yeah. we'll discuss. We have water development account 1, $17 million. Account 2, which we talked about, $9 million in projects, and then in account 3, $2 million in projects coming forward. But that will be outside of today's discussion.
Okay. So. We look forward to that sometime in February-ish, March-ish.
Mm-hmm. There's something going on in February.
Yeah. Undermine me. Actually, I have to vote on all our actions a little later on. Okay, well, anything else? The good of the order. We appreciate your work, and we'd all love to see some big dams, but let's keep our fingers crossed, I guess. certainly won't hold our breath. Thank you. Appreciate
Thank you,
your good
Chairman.
Work. Have a Merry Christmas. Don't anticipate any callbacks, so
okay.
Perhaps we'll see you when we work the bill.
We're around, so give us a call if you need us.
Okay, thank you. Next is Livestock Board. Remember, you need to stretch, or are you all right? Stretch at your desk while we change positions. I guess we're all right. It's only been an hour and 10 minutes, so we usually go a full 2 hours. Maybe we'll stretch here for 5 minutes. Agency 51, I think we're mic'd up here. Agency 51, Livestock Board, welcome. And how we've been proceeding, basically any comments, general comments you have, and introduce all your team, and then we'll go through your budget just page by page, look at your standard budget. We have some standard questions we've been asking, and then, of course, your exceptions. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Glad to be here this morning. First of all, to my right, I have Ann Peterson, who is our business supervisor and fiscal person for our agency. Behind me, I have our brand commissioner, Lee Romza. And then in the back row here, we have Elizabeth Phelp, who is the president of the Livestock Board of the seven-member producer board with us here this morning.
Okay,
so
great.
Well, thank you very much. We've had a very good year at the Livestock Board. As you know, we have general fund monies as well as we have an additional brand fund, which is called our earmarked account. And so you'll hear it referred to as the brand fund. Those are direct producer-generated dollars. Those dollars are generated through our brand recording unit with renewal of brands, brand transfers, any of those brands transactions that way. In addition, then we have our brand inspection program that generates revenue for that account as well through the brand inspection fees and through our permits and all of those type of activities. So we have a management of managing those two different funds. The general everyday, our law enforcement unit, our animal health unit, our administration piece are mainly generated by general fund dollars. We do have some continue to have some federal grant monies that are included in there, and of course that's yet to be seen from year to year how those will transpire, but they do have an impact to our budget. And then our brand recording unit is 100% brand funded, and then our brand inspection unit, as you know, the brand inspector salaries are done by 35% are from the general fund and 65% are for that brand fund. So it's a management of a balancing act for that purpose. So that kind of covers the general comments as far as what we're doing. The computerization project I'll talk a little bit more about as we move into our exception requests. Beginning, if you look on page 3 of the budget document.
Mr. Chairman, before we get into the budget,
yes.
I know over the last several years the number of brand inspections has been going down considerably, and the numbers have been going down in our livestock populations, primarily, well, cattle and sheep, and I can't remember the numbers. Where are we? Are we still seeing that decline, the numbers, and it relates directly to brand inspections?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, if I could defer to our brand commissioner, Lee Romza, to specifically speak to that, he would be more knowledgeable.
Was he going to speak to it later on? I don't want to. Now's a good time. Let's
now would be a good time, Senator. Mr. Chairman, we have seen a decline, and last year we actually saw a bump up because of the dry conditions in 2012. So we actually had more animals that went through the inspection system. But this year we were anticipating that the numbers would be down again, and so far they have been.
Mr. Chairman, what's the livestock population been in our state in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years? We're seeing a pretty good decline. I know a lot of it's cost of hay, but a lot of it's the inability of being able to have access to federal lands and grazing permits and those things. What's the impact been? Have you seen a trend that's going down? And if have, what's the percentages looking like?
Mr. Chairman, the trend through the last 10 or 12 years is our livestock numbers are down a third from what they were about 12 years ago. And especially more than a third when it comes to sheep numbers. And it's kind of a trend we've seen nationwide, too. This year, 2013, the national cattle inventory for the United States is the lowest it's been since the early 50s. So it's kind of followed that trend, but a lot of it has to do with our grazing conditions. You know, we had 7 years of drought. And then it leveled off, and then we had a pretty dry year last year, and we had fires last year, and then we saw a pretty big sell-off. So this year we're expecting it to be down and probably down for the next couple of years just because there's really not an inventory to replace the numbers.
One last thing, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Can you quantify the impact of the Forest Service and BLM on the grazing situation and relate that to numbers and the hit we've taken in our livestock industry in our state?
Mr. Chairman, to quantify it, I'd probably need to get better figures from the grazing permits themselves, but I can tell you that we used to inspect about 800,000 sheep a year, and it's had a big impact on the sheep permits and the forest permits. And the last few years, we're down to about 300,000. Cattle inspections have been over 2.5 million at one point, and now they're down to, you know, about 1.5 to 2 million per year.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, part of that is just to talk about the impact of the feds and what they're doing to us, but also when your brand inspections go down, so do your revenues you generate, and you still have the people out there that need to do the brand inspections, but we've taken a heck of a hit to our revenue stream. Thank you.
You're welcome, thank you, sir.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those same lines, I've been hearing more and more discussion from producers recently about the impact of increased numbers of particularly elk around the state where there have never been elk before, and all of a sudden, you know, they have 100, 150 head of elk camped on them, and the impact that's had on our livestock numbers. I don't know if your agency has the ability to pull that together and quantify it, but I see it as a bigger and bigger problem. For instance, one producer I know had about 30 sections wiped out by hail this year, took their cattle, leased a farm so that they could hopefully regrow some winter feed, turn around the next day, and they've got a couple hundred head of elk camped out on that range. So that's a huge impact.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace and Representative Bebout, it's going to be hard to quantify those types of situations and pinpoint it to what the impacts are, but they certainly are impacts. And as we all know, there's only a certain amount of forage available, so when we have increased in other ungulates that graze the same forage species, it definitely has an impact to what the amount of livestock that can be out there. So those are impacts, but as far as quantifying those, that gets to be a really challenging thing, and particularly from our agency perspective as far as knowing, you know, number of inspections and looking at that standpoint. So we will certainly keep that in mind and do what we can and see if we can talk to anybody to come up with that, but that may be a real hard thing to do.
Okay. Representative Wallace.
Now that we're off on this great tangent, Mr. Chairman, we haven't even talked about the horses and the disappearance of the consent decree, and is your agency involved in any of that situation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, we have been involved from the standpoint I serve on the sub-cabinet of the Natural Resources and Energy team, and we have had a very minor discussion as far as the wild horse situation, and we've had discussions as far as what our laws are as far as the stray animals on private lands, those types of things, and I have had conversations with the governor's policy analyst and talking about, you know, when we get to looking at it, if there's anything that we can do to help and to have those conversations, that we've been involved from that standpoint, because there certainly have been in the past and could be some potential remedies, but it's a real fine line, and we need to sit down and thoroughly investigate all of those.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, and getting back to one thing that Senator Bebout said, co-chairman, taking a look at ahead at a handout that we have that I'll be referring to later, we have some projections as far as the brand fund history balance, getting to your point of looking at that revenue stream for the brand fund and what we're doing with that. And so we can either take a look at that now or we can hold off and look at that when we get to the salary adjustment piece for the brand inspectors.
You know, I think just when we get to the salary piece, because it's going to all tie in, and I think we'll have some questions about how that's all going to work.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so referring back to page 3 of the budget, looking at that, if you look in the far right-hand column of the governor's recommendation and what the source of the funding is there, to point out, our general fund is roughly $8.2 million, and that's 45.45% of our entire budget for the agency. Then we have an additional $425,092 for 2.36% of our budget comes from the federal funds. So not a large impact, but certainly does some really good things in the area that we have that money for. And then the other funds, which is, here again, that brand fund money, direct producer-related dollars, is at $9.4 million, and that's 52.19% of our entire budget for our agency. So although we have, four units, that brand unit definitely is a lion's share of our agency and the cornerstone of our agency, and those direct producer-generated dollars are important to our budget. Okay, moving on, of course, the standard information, going to page 7, looking at what our performance measures are, and I will take a moment here to tell you that our performance measure number 1 for the agency continues to be the computerization and technology advancement. And I know this committee and the legislature have heard for many years about our computerization and need for to happen within the agency. Funding has been appropriated in both for 2011 and 2012. I am glad to report that we do have a computer contract now with the company, a software vendor. We are moving forward with that computerization effort, and it is going well. The contract was finalized and signed on September 16th of this year. So they're in the development stages, they're in the documentation stages. We just, as of yesterday, the front page, the landing page, was rolled out to the staff in the office, showing them what that is going to look and feel like, and I would be happy to share that link with you now as well, so that you can look at it, because the landing page, it's going to be a web-based system, and it will be based on user permissions, so that what the public sees and what our employees see as we come up to this landing page, and then they have login, whether you be a public or whether you be one of our employees, then based upon your permissions, then you will have access to other things. But it is a very attractive, very professional. We are moving forward with that. It'll be an integrated system. The first piece of it that's going to be done is some general administration things here, and those will be done just shortly after legislative session gets done. And then we go into the brand recording piece that will be done by the end of May. And so our brand renewal for next year will actually be done with our new computerization system. And so then we're building that piece by piece. And with the end date of that computerization contract right now being no later than June of 2014. And I don't have the exact date of that contract end date, but we are very excited about getting that. And here again, that's for the core functionality. And the exciting thing to see with the computerization system is as we start doing this, because we had many, many functions that weren't even computerized at all and were done on paper and pencil, and to see then people starting to think, well, if we did that, we could do this. So we're creating a backlog list of additional things that would be good for customer service and add additional functionality to make our agency more efficient, but that is not going to be able to be rolled into this core functionality piece. So we are excited about the fact that we are moving forward, and we'll be having something to show very, very shortly, and you will be able to view that. So that here again remains our number one performance measure. Going on to page 8, our department priorities as far as our exception requests. And you'll see that we have 7 exception requests for the agency for the department requested just a little over $1 million. And here again, that was split out. General fund being $388,250 and other funds of $619,827. The priorities number 3, 5, and 7 are all tied to our computerization and technology efforts. So when I talk about those, I will kind of lump those together, and we have been working very closely with ETS and the staff over there as far as in this effort to do the computerization. So it's based upon a lot of their recommendations and working closely with them in order to get the appropriate equipment that we need.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go, Chair.
Mr. Chairman, how much money have we spent over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years on our computer issues with the livestock board? There have been appropriations, and we've had some difficulties. Do you have a total amount?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, Senator Bebout, if we look at our computerization effort from the time that we got our money to go forward with the project that we're talking about now, that was started in the appropriation. The first appropriation was in, we received it July 1st of 2011, and that amount was coming from the earmarked fund, here again that brand fund, of $361,185. Then we additionally received an additional appropriation in the legislative session in an exception request, and that appropriation we received on July 1st of 2012, and there was a general fund amount of $156,634, and here again an earmarked amount of $402,581. So the total amount of those two different appropriations, the lion's share coming from the brand fund, and then the general fund portion, was $920,400. As of the end of October, we still have 94% of that we're working with this contract that we're on now. We are starting to expend that at a fairly rapid rate now in order to get the work done now that we have an actual contract and moving forward. So that amount is projected to be mostly expended by that period of time when the end of the contract. And I'd have to look. We had a little bit of dollars left that was not contracted, but we, as we all know, there are a lot of times overruns and things that we need to do, so we wanted a little bit of a cushion there and not contract the full dollar amount, and that's what we went through the request for proposal process and what the vendor bid.
Thank you.
Okay, continue.
Okay, so I will go through each one of those individual priorities as we move through the budget document, if that's okay with the chairman. The committee.
Yeah, I think if we just kind of will start with number one, and that one will probably generate some discussion.
Okay. Do you want to jump to number one? Because it's actually at the very end of the budget document.
Oh, it is.
So
well, what we've been doing
pages?
Is just page by page, yeah. So
okay.
We'll just keep flipping and
all right,
see
Mr.
if we
Chairman.
Have questions.
Moving forward then, looking at going to page 12. And looking at, this is our administration unit, and the general recommendation from the governor was to approve the standard budget. And then we come into our exception budget request of priority number 3.
Lynn, just looking at your salaries and administration, your 6 employees, it's has it gone up just a little bit? Has there been, looks like it's up a couple, has there been like a reclassification or... Am I looking at that right?
Mr. Chairman, as far as in the, you're looking on page 10?
Page 10.
Okay, page 10, as far as the administration salary-wise, there was a reclassification that we did for an assistant veterinarian for field operations, and we did reclassify that position from a field vet that was equal to a field veterinarian for game and fish to actually an administrative field operations. He's an at-will employee now and serves in a greater capacity in that way.
Okay, I stopped your flow there. You're on page 12. I think we had the standard budget, and now we're moving on to your exceptions.
Okay, it's exception bed priority number three is for the current equipment replacement. Here again, as I stated, this goes along with our computerization project. In order to make sure that we have a successful project, we need to have the most up-to-date equipment. Looking at a lot of our equipment was already off warranty or going off warranty, and working with ETS, they recommended that we do the total replacement program through Enterprise Technology Services. For the number of equipment there, we had 15 desktop computers, 36 laptop computers, and 27 ATG computers. And so when you look at the funding source of that, here again what we did is took the number of computers based upon whether it was totally general funded money, whether it was totally brand funded, and so the percentages came up really odd as far as where the funding came from, but that's how that was split out. Here again, we went with the 35-65 split for the brand unit computers. That recommendation from the governor was to approve that hardware as recommended by the OCIO. Going
Mr. Chairman,
on,
Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. It's just amazing who gets a memo and who doesn't on computers. Maybe we could think about a way to. I guess everybody that's come to us except for one that didn't has needed computers. Brett, was there any, this just all kind of happened? Or is it because we have the ETS now set up and we're running it through them and we've been negligent in the past? Is this kind of an end result of not doing what we should have done the last two or three years?
Mr. Chairman, specifically on computers, I think you just see different departments on different replacement schedules depending on how they have historically handled the replacement of their computer inventories.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm just seeing more than maybe this is, there's a lot of them that aren't doing it. Anyway, we don't need to talk any more about it.
Just thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just on the numbers, the number of computers. I'm trying to just read that narrative. It's 15 desktops, 36 laptops, and then 27 ATG. Is that a different? What's that? Question is, I mean, these are for obviously brand inspectors, not just the six folks in administration, right?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. This is for our entire agency, so this includes all of the individual units. It's not just for the brand unit. So it includes the administrative unit, the law enforcement unit, animal health unit, and the brand unit. And so these computers, the ATGs are actually like a tough book. They're a ruggedized laptop. And so those have been sent out into the field, so those are more for the brand inspectors. There are also some of the other just standard laptops that some of the brand inspectors have as well. But these are computers that are used throughout the agency, and I can't speak for other agencies and other computer requests, but I will tell you for ours in looking at it, we have probably not kept up with replacing them as often and making sure that we ask for those requests to have those replacements. And so we're trying to pay more close attention to our replacement schedules now at the recommendation of ETS.
Okay. Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This 35-65 split, as you discussed earlier, where the brand inspections are down, that has a large impact on this 35-65 split, obviously, because you have less money coming from your brand inspection department. Is that going to create you a large problem as we move forward here? Do we need to revisit that split? Would you address that a little bit? Because I know it's going to affect us as we move on through this budget.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, right now we are solvent with the 35-65 split. The 35% was based upon what additional duties that those brand inspectors do, and I think that has remained very close to what the additional duties that they do within their job, in addition to their just strictly brand inspecting livestock. So if we address it, we're going to have to address it in a large capacity as far as how we justify that, not saying that we wouldn't go back and take a look at that. But we are solvent within our brand fund with the 35-65 split, with the additional computerization monies out of there and that type of situation. So if that's answering your question.
For now, that'll do.
Okay, so moving on to priority number four for the state veterinarian vehicle replacement. With our animal health unit, we have had several vehicles that have been purchased through federal dollars in the past through federal grants. And as we come up on high mileage for those vehicles, then we come into a quandary of the state veterinarian's vehicle. If you see there, July 1st, 2013, was 145,000, over 145,000 miles, and using the current averages as projections, by the end of the next biennium, he'd be over 230,000 miles. So what we would propose doing is purchasing the vehicle through the state, running it through motor vehicle services as a permanently assigned vehicle, and replacing that. So that was the justification for that that request, and the governor has recommended funding that request. Any questions on that one?
Senator Meyer.
My standard question on these vehicles is that I'm assuming your grand inspectors or your vets use cell phones, and whether you guys are going to equip these things with hands-free cellular service.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the vehicles that we are getting now as replacements are coming with the Bluetooth technology. Some of the vehicles that we have currently for our classified staff, we have gotten some of the hands-free Bluetooth capabilities. The brand inspectors have their own vehicles. They provide their own equipment that way. There is some variance as far as the cell phone. We do pay for some of the cell phone usage depending on areas and positions and that type of thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, moving on to page 14, priority number five. Here again is new computer equipment. This is proposed new hardware for our computerization of the field operations for our computerization project. Without the hardware, the software really doesn't benefit us and make it efficient. So we're looking at purchasing some new computer hardware equipment in order to deploy to the field for the brand inspection portion of our computerization project. Here again, this was done in close coordination with ETS and what they're recommending, and all the hardware purchases will be done that way as well. There is a lot of variability as it's being proposed through our computerization system as far as what the inspectors will need in order to do that, and it's a generational thing as far as the size of what their eyes will tolerate as far as the size of the equipment. And I will our computerization project and the vendor that we have will be building an app that will be out in the App Store, that and we'll have an Apple app, we'll have a Android app, and they will be able to use their smartphones in order to do the inspections, Bluetooth, be able to print out through the printers. Of course, that's here again if they choose to do that. We're going to have a variety of equipment that they will be able to use. They may be able to use iPads. A rugged iPad. They may be able to use laptops. They can use any device because it's going to be web-based and there will be those apps built. So it will be variable as far as what they get. It won't be a one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter approach for those brand inspectors.
Co-chair. Okay, Senator Perkins.
Just where did it go? So one was the Mesa, help me understand what an Archer and a Mesa is. Portable printers, I understand.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, a Mesa and an Archer are a handheld unit that we are currently using with our pilot project in two markets, in Riverton and Worland, and they are here again an electronic handheld device that they're able to capture the brand inspection information and then upload that to a computer and print that information out. So at the time when we developed this budget, and not knowing what our computer vendor was going to be proposing, because we didn't have a contract at that time, we were still in the contract negotiation stage, we used what we were using in that pilot project as a basis for building our budget. So that's what we based it on. We may be able to beat those figures as far as what each unit is by being able to have applications that you can do on your phone or an iPad are going to be cheaper than what these archers and maces are. But that's what we based our figures on. And until everybody gets solid with what they're going to use, we still won't know what piece of equipment they're going to be purchasing.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, and I just running up, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I was just running up, and I thought that you had like when you add all your AWACS and your part-time and full-time and your brand inspectors and your employees and everybody all together, you had about 91 or so folks. And when I add those all up with the computers that were in the first request and this one, we've got about 147 different types of 147 computers for about 90-odd folks. That's if everybody gets one. I'm trying to understand those numbers. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, part of the situation that we're dealing with, we have 117 employees with the agency. There are 94 that are AWAC employees as brand inspectors, and then we have our classified staff. But with that, if they're doing that inspection on their phone while they're out in the field, they are still going to have the need for the computer, the laptop, or the desktop at home to be able to fully look at the screen when they're doing their monthly and year-end reports. So even though it may be on a smaller device, if they're doing it on their smartphone out there, they're not going to be able to look and verify and audit all of their reports at the end of the year. So that's where those people who still have the laptops are still going to need some sort of a laptop or something in addition to whatever smartphone device they use. And it may be their own individual smartphone, but that's where the thinking is. They can't do all of their reporting on that handheld Archer or Mesa unit. That's why there's a duplicate of numbers.
No, Mr. Chairman, that was what I was going to ask.
Okay. Okay. Continue.
Okay, so here again, that's for the computer equipment. Priority number 7 is the upgrade to Microsoft Office. In the request that we made when we first made this request and put our budget document together, we were working with ETS, but there are questions surrounding how many professional licenses we will need versus how many standard licenses we will need, and going to the future of Google Apps versus the Microsoft. So we are perfectly fine with what the recommendation is from ETS as far as the funding recommendation on this request to continue to keep our office up to date with software. Okay, moving on to the next unit on page 19 is our veterinary repayment program. This is a statutory program that is pass-through dollars to help support veterinarians to come back to Wyoming and participate in animal food agriculture practices. And we do contracts with a number of veterinarians each year for this program. The standard is the $270,000. That's all pass-through money, and we're continuing to
Mr. Chairman,
have that program.
Representative Moniz.
How is that program working? Are you getting vets to come back in the state and work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, we have had requests and applications for those funds each year as we have funds available, and we do those for three-year contracts. So whether it is, it's hard to quantify whether it's bringing them back to the state and keeping him here, but we are getting young veterinarians that are then practicing in the state, and I believe this is helping them to do so. But quantifying whether they would be here anyway or whether this program is actually bringing them here, that's something that we haven't been able to quantify.
Okay. Did you have,
Mr. Coach? Along that same line, Mr. Chairman, how many are in it and what are the applications?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to defer to our business supervisor to do the reports on the numbers of the people who we have contracts with.
I don't have the total number that we have currently. I don't have the total number that we have currently. I can certainly get that information for you. We normally approve between 3 and 5 applications a year, ranging between 25 and 75% funding.
Okay, moving on, starting on page 21, we move into our information technology unit. And this unit was created, and that's where the money is going through for our computerization project and also the support for information technology activities within our agency that was pulled out of each individual unit and combined into one information technology unit. Starting on page 23, we move into our animal health unit budget. And going forward in that, the governor is on page 25 recommending the standard budget as approved. We don't have any exceptions in that unit until we get into page...
Just to back up to page 23, mm-hmm. Sorry, on animal health. Just your personnel services, $24,000 increase.
Mr. Chairman, I would have to defer to actually the D1s, and we could provide that for you. That may be, some of that may be in benefit dollars. Again, I believe, as I was corrected, that the actual assistant state veterinarian salary is out of this place and not the other one. So I would have to refer to those D1s in order to see exactly what that is and provide you with that information if you so choose.
Okay.
All right. On page 28, we begin with our law enforcement unit. And going on to page 29, with the exception budget request, this is priority number 6 is increased replacement vehicle costs. This is an increase in monthly fees, not actual additional vehicles or for vehicles themselves. What happens when we have these vehicles is when they get to a certain point, they are recommended by motor vehicle services that we start replacing vehicles as they get miles put on them. So we do a replacement. Anytime we do a replacement, they figure that monthly cost based upon the replacement of that vehicle, how much that vehicle will cost to maintain, and the fuel for that vehicle. So what traditionally happens is those fees with a new vehicle, as with any new vehicle, increases. So the monthly fee increases, and so that's put into our budget, and we don't have control over what those are. So we can continue to drive the vehicle until the wheels fall off and it breaks down, or we do that replacement and we have those fee increases. We have absorbed those out of our budget up to this point for many years. We are finally at the point where it's going to, if we continue to absorb those fees, it's going to have an impact to the services that we can provide. We're going to have to cut something else in order to keep our vehicles going and keep our guys out there when they're providing safety and law enforcement activities to provide them with those. So we are asking for that increase in what we project that those fees will be.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, just a quick question. These vehicles and the one for the veterinarian, are any of them diesels?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, no, they are not. They are all gas vehicles.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stepson.
Mr. Chairman, what line item or where typically were you absorbing those costs in the past? Do you know what code those would fall under?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, those are out of the 0223 line item, if you look on back on page 26. And so what was happening is that we were robbing from any other place within that 200 series. So we may have been robbing from travel in-state. We may have been robbing from the farm and livestock supplies. It was wherever we could come up with that funding in order to then put it into that permanent vehicle line.
So, Mr. Chairman, so on this additional amount then, would you anticipate that that would be show itself in your next standard budget in the 223 code?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, yes, that's where it would show up.
Okay.
Senator Perkins.
And so just to follow up on that, So what you anticipate in your next standard budget, if the vehicle replacement comes through, that it drops the it drops the maintenance of that vehicle about 20%. So as I look at that way, I mean, just to, you know, you've got the 29,219, which I think is the maintenance, the cost of the maintenance, but that number would drop by about half. And then that would reduce your 223 code because you replaced the vehicle. Is that how that works?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, no, it's actually the opposite way. When you replace it with a new vehicle, the amount that you pay for the monthly amount per vehicle goes up. So, for instance, in the narrative there, it talks about when the vehicle is replaced, the monthly maintenance fees are established for the agency by the state motor pool, and in fiscal year 11 and 13, the fees on two vehicles increased 34%. So if they were currently at $500 and we were paying $500 a month, it's an additional 34% on top of the $500 is what we would then be paying in fees. So it's an increase in the fees on the monthly amount, not a decrease.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I don't get that. I mean, it's the motor pool charges you more to maintain a new vehicle than it does an old vehicle?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, they charge, it's not just a maintenance fee. It's for the fuel, it's for maintenance, and then it's for replacement of a new vehicle. So if we keep that vehicle for 5 years, if we buy the vehicle at $20,000 now, in 5 years, that same $20,000 vehicle of like vehicle is probably going to be $25,000. So they're actually building into that monthly cost at motor vehicle, they are building in a replacement amount as well. So they are charging you for that replacement amount. So there's enough in that account built up to replace that vehicle.
So, Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question to Brett then? So, it seems to me like if we do that, we're double dipping, that we're paying back the motor pool fee, we're paying for that, but then these guys are all paying these increased amounts for the replacement, but all of a sudden then we're getting exception requests for replacement vehicles, which seems like we should already have the replacement money set aside in the either under A&I or somewhere. Help me understand.
Brett?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, first of all, what the director is indicating is correct. For a vehicle that has been set up with fleet, there is a depreciation component in the rate that ties back to the replacement of that vehicle. So if you go back to A&I specifically on that request, you might recall there was, I think, about a $7.5 million request to purchase vehicles for spending authority, and I believe what you're looking at is those vehicles are vehicles that are either within the fleet itself or are permanently assigned vehicles to agencies. So I think the distinction in this case is the veterinarian's vehicle. I'm not sure why it's being treated differently. I think that's if that's your question, because it appears to be to me. I'm sorry. So I think the distinction, I'm not sure what that distinction is in terms of these vehicles that have to be replaced and then where we ask for the full replacement value for the vet's vehicle. And I think we'll need to dig a little bit deeper to get that clarification for you.
Representative Stubbs.
And Mr. Chairman, just if you would, because that, having an understanding of that would be helpful. So.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, and on that note, with the distinction between the state veterinarian's vehicle in this case that was originally purchased with federal dollars, that vehicle, the monthly amount is actually less on it because they are not getting a replacement for it because it was purchased with dollars outside of motor vehicle services. So those vehicles that were purchased with federal dollars, it's actually a lower monthly amount than it is for ones that are actually purchased through motor vehicle services.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to beat this dead vehicle just a little bit more. But the, because I, you know, and I'm picking on this one, but this is a light kind of gone on about vehicles, but maybe it's a dim light, but it's a light nevertheless. So I'm assuming that we've had a state veterinarian for a number of years, and the state veterinarian had a vehicle, but somewhere along the line, we got from our federal master, we got a little bit of money, and we bought a vehicle with some federal funds, and so that because we bought it with federal funds, there was no replacement for that particular vehicle in the motor pool agency depreciation fund, I'm assuming, but I'm also assuming that the veterinarian had a vehicle before we ever bought one with federal funds, so ultimately that money seems to be, anyway, it just seems to me, two things occur to me. Is once it seems like it could be double dipping, but the other one is that when we, if we buy, agencies buy vehicles, in this case, with other money, that all of a sudden then when that source that used to borrow the money dries up, all of a sudden we automatically have this increase into the motor vehicle fund, which seems to be, we lose a little bit of control and oversight there with respect to our motor vehicle pool. Anyway, it's something that just seems kind of odd to me.
Okay. All right. Well, we're moving on.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, so that completes that's the only exception request within the law enforcement unit.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question before we leave that.
Mr. Co-Chair.
You know, under law enforcement base budget to standard, we went from 6 to 5. And then under the animal health, we went base to standard 3 to 4. Could you do some changing? Could you explain that to me, please?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, yes, what we did is we did acknowledge the net to zero request that we did within the Chapter 17 budget narratives, and that position was moved out of the law enforcement. It was a livestock emergency management or slash homeland security position, and that position we were asking within the exception budget request to move that out of law enforcement and a more appropriate house that under the animal health, because that is a function of our animal health unit. So that was what the reasoning was for that. So that's what the request was.
Thank you.
Moving on to starting on page 32, this is our brucellosis budget, division number 300. And within that, there are three different categories. There's the 0301, which is our lab tech brucellosis. The $218,000 is specifically pass-through dollars that we contract with the University of Wyoming State Vet Lab, and they do the testing and mailing out of brucellosis testing supplies, and they do all the testing and then bill us for that, for producers testing. The brucellosis travel is an out-of-state travel category, the O3-02 for $9,600 within the brucellosis category. And then also we have the brucellosis testing that is statutorily mandated what we can pay for with that. In addition, there are also rules that the Livestock Board oversees under the O3-03 as far as payments on that. That a good share of that goes to reimburse veterinarians around the state for doing brucellosis testing activities on herds, and particularly it is related to those herds that are within the designated surveillance area for brucellosis, in other words, that up around the greater Yellowstone area, and the area is designated by the Livestock Board. So moving on, unless there are further questions on the brucellosis funding, there weren't any additional requests there. Unless there's any questions, we'll move on to page 41.
Representative Burkhart.
Sorry. There's another permanently assigned vehicle in there for $3,000 under brucellosis testing. Is that an additional vehicle to the others that were mentioned?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, that permanently assigned vehicle amount in that brucellosis testing, what we do is if we need to pay for, if we've got a veterinarian, and yes, we do have additional vehicles besides the state veterinarian vehicles that are in animal health. And so those vehicles, if we have a brucellosis outbreak that we're doing a lot of testing, we have the ability to pay for that monthly amount if that's what their activities were for that month, is to be doing that brucellosis testing. So we have several other vehicles besides the state veterinarian's vehicle that are permanently assigned that are through the motor vehicle services. And we also have an additional one federally funded vehicle as well.
Mr. Chairman, another question. $26,000 for utilities for two people and a lab seems a little high.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, that $26,000, the money within the brucellosis testing isn't specifically for any people and a particular lab. Here again, that's a category that has been in the standard budget and has moved forward in the standard budget that may be utilized in the case of the brucellosis testing. And here again, for the brucellosis testing, it's very specific of what those funds, when they can be used. And so traditionally, we have not used that money in the past. We continue to revert money out of the brucellosis. It's kind of an emergency management fund, like a fire fund or anything else. You put it into the fund for the brucellosis testing, hoping that you won't have to use it. We utilize within what we're statutorily allowed to use it for, but traditionally we have reverted money from this fund, and that is why the board opted to, as of July 1st of this last year in 2013, take some of our agency cut in that area. So even though it's budgeted for $26,000 there, it's not for a specific purpose identified except in emergency cases for the brucellosis testing.
Mr. Chairman, so that reverts to general fund if not used?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Burkhart, yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, when we did our 8% budget reductions, we had $223,000 that was excess for testing reimbursement to the vets. Is that where this budget was in this budget? Is that where that amount was?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-chairman, yes.
Okay, and so you did not biannualize that. You only took it for 1 year. And the other question is, part of that is, you know, general fund money, but also is a plant animal DS and PTCL for 382. When you made the reductions, it was all general fund money. So this other money that came through last time, and you're putting in it again for this next biennial budget. Tell me where those funds are coming from and what they are.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, that $382,000 is what is called our cooperative grant agreement with USDA APHIS.
APHIS, okay.
Yes. And so that money, previously up till this current year that we're in, as far as their cooperative grant agreement year, that money has been specifically for brucellosis. This year they roll, and then we had an avian influenza grant, and we had equines and small cervid grant. This particular biennium, they have actually made that into one umbrella cooperative grant agreement, and that is where, here again, that money is coming from. So one grant agreement that covers the cattle animal health, brucellosis, as well as other functions.
Mr. Chairman, yep. Is that determined any way, shape, or form by what the state commits to that program, or is it just the amount of money they come up with negotiating with you and the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, that money, we get what they say we're going to get, and that's all done at a federal level as far as determining which state gets how much money and for what programs.
And so, Mr. Chairman, they do it initially for a two-year budget cycle then, or is this something that they give you so much every year, or is this all one check that comes at the beginning of the biennium? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, our cooperative grant agreements are done on a yearly basis, so it's a one-year amount. That grant runs from April 1st. It's supposed to run from April 1st to March 31st. The last few years with the federal funding issues that they've had, our grant has not actually, we haven't even known the amount of our grant, usually going into about the end of May into June to get solidified of what funding we actually get. So it is not done on a biennial basis, and this is just a projection to our budget for that.
Okay. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, is, that's where we made the cuts. What will you be, could you provide the committee with the amount of money that you did actually spend to reimburse the vets for the last two-year cycle, so we could see what that number is?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, we would be happy
Thanks.
To do so.
Senator Perkins.
Does the cooperative grant agreement money, does that come in the farm bill, or does it come usually in some other bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I am not certain. I do not believe that it is tied to the farm bill. It comes in a different form to APHIS Veterinary Services in their budget.
Representative Wallace has some input on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The answer to that is it comes through the Agriculture Appropriations Bill, which in the federal level is completely separate from the farm bill.
Okay. All right. Moving on.
Okay, moving on to page 42, this is our estrays budget, the account for the estrays. There has been a standard budget amount in there for several years that was a $50,000 appropriation. We have continually been seeing the number of cases increasing, and also we have been seeing the associated costs increasing with these estrays. And there's a difference in that, and sometimes it's hard to define what is an estray. But one of the things that you can think about it as is the estrays, the owner is not in possession of it. And we hear a lot about the animal cruelty and about, seizing animals, taking animals for animal care type situations. And the owner is in control of the animal, so it gets to be a really fine line. So we cannot use out of this estray fund directly for those animal care cases. This is for estrays and those animals who end up mixed and at the sale barn. They sort them out and they are sold as an estray and get the money to the rightful owner. Many times we have animals that we don't know who the owners are and try to identify owners, and that money is managed in that estray account. So that's what this money is used for. Looking back in 2012, there were actually, in 2012 we had a total of 89 head of livestock that were identified as a strays, and there are stipulations within those statutes as far as how that's to be determined, but we do have the care for those animals while they are listed as a strays, and we advertise those. In 2013, up until the end of September, we had already had 143 head of livestock that for this year, so it was much increased, and so we are continuing to see those costs rise. So it is important that we believe to maintain that astray account.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many have, I'm still trying to find some of my cows. How many, I know you've got 149, how many people have contacted your brand inspectors trying to figure out where their cattle are? What I'm getting at is how many actually show up, and then if there's a larger number missing, then there's some concerns where are they, where, why are they missing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, we have a lot of missing livestock reports in addition to, you know, the strays that have been found. As far as quantifying a number of how many contact their brand inspectors, I can't put a number to that, but I do know our brand inspectors, and particularly even at the sale barns, they are contacted all the time, and those stray lists are advertised then as far as what we have on that stray list, and we do have a lot of recovery.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what you do is you look at the brand, obviously, and do you notify the holder of the brand? Is that the way it procedurally works?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, yes, that is how it works, if they are branded. And that's kind of some of the challenges that we have with some of it is we have a lot of people who don't brand their livestock or who don't rebrand. So trying to prove that they have ownership of that animal can be a challenge as well, and that's what some of the animals end up in. The checks get held because they have to show proof of ownership before we can actually give that turn that check and that
money.
Well,
I'd rather be trying to prove that it's my cow than not knowing where the cow ended up. We can't find it. So, okay, thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Are any of these horses?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, yes, in fact, year to date, the number of horses here again as of the end of September, that out of that 143, 51 of those were horses.
The question I have are you seeing any of these 40-acre ranchettes, can't afford the price of hay, load up their horse, drop it off in the middle of nowhere?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, yes, absolutely. We are seeing many instances of that. And so here again, we've had horses show up in people's pastures, in the middle of nowhere, along roadsides, and nobody in the area knows whose horse it is, but they're hoping that somebody will pick it up and take care of it. We see a lot of that.
So now when those are sold, do you recoup your feeding costs and everything before any money is given back to the owner if they're eventually found?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, yes, the way the stray works is we will recoup as much as we can. Many of our horse cases, unfortunately, because of the salvage value of horses, we have more in them than what they sell for. But if they sell for more than what our expenses are and an owner is identified, yes, we then turn over, but we do take our expenses out of that.
And if an owner is identified, is there statutes that basically deal with abandonment? Is that under the cruelty statutes?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the abandonment is not specifically under the cruelty statutes, but there are some provisions in that abandonment. But most of the horses that we identify, we never know whose they are.
But if you would find somebody and you say that it's Mary and Bob over here took all their horses out and dropped them off in Jeff's pasture, then you find out that they're Mary and Bob's. What happens to Mary and Bob?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, we turn that over to our law enforcement unit, and they work through the process, and it's going to vary depending on, I have to say that it varies depending on who the prosecuting attorney is. And also the judge in that county, we have issued citations. They aren't always held up. That varies from county to county as far as how they look at that.
What's the worst case scenario for Mary and Bob?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I can't really answer that as far as what the worst-case scenario would be. I would have to do some research and find out what worst-case scenario, because there are a lot of ifs and ands. Our law enforcement have the ability, if they have, say, 10 head, they have the ability to give them a citation for each of those. Now, what the current bond schedule is, I would have to defer, and I would have to look that up on that particular offense. But they are allowed to do it for each individual animals, but judges don't look kindly at that. So most typically what happens is they get one citation, even though it may be 10 animals.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to have a little information on that, see whether or not it evidently, the penalty, whatever it is not being, I guess it isn't stopping it, so maybe we need to look at that closer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Wallace.
So we know that there are increasing numbers of these animal cruelty cases because of the whole situation. You've got this estray account that can take care of those animals where the owner cannot be identified. For whatever reason, what account do you use to take care of animals that are picked up in these law enforcement situations?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, we do not have an account. That account is zero. We do not have any funding to do so. So what we do is we work very closely with the county that this situation is working with. Per statute, what was put into statute, and I don't remember what year it was, we have a cost of care bonding. So if animals are identified that are being cruelly treated and we are going to be seizing them, our law enforcement will work with the county attorney and work with the county sheriff, and they do a cost of care bonding and identify what they think it would take to be able to take care of those animals in that interim period of time in order that we can seize them, take care of them, and get rid of them. And, of course, we're at the mercy of then whether they can come up with that cost of care bonding. If they can't, then those animals can be immediately disposed of, that type of thing. Otherwise, we use what the cost of care is. There was a situation a few years back up in Park County that if I my memory serves me correct from what my law enforcement were telling me here recently, there were 60 head of horses that were in this situation, and they went to the judge. The judge determined that he wanted those animals kept and taken care of until the case could go to court. It became very expensive, and what ended up happening was they went to court, and at that time, then the people who were taking care of him and feeding him, it was a $45,000 feed bill and care bill for those animals. We don't have any money to do that, and neither do most of the counties. So we have to work through the cost of care bonding. We try to work very closely with getting people who are in that situation to honor things and to turn them over, sign them over to us so that then we can dispose of them, we can put them and dispose of them and not have a cost associated with them. It gets to be a very fine line, but we have zero funds that we can do that with.
Okay. Representative Wallace.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. So then who paid the $45,000?
Luckily enough, in that situation, the only reason that it was done that way is there was an agreement made with one of our friends that we don't really necessarily like to use as much, but with HSUS, and they had agreed to take care of those animals and pay for that cost. So in that case, it worked out to be a good situation for the animals, and they were taken care of.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We're learning all kinds of stuff today. That's the beauty of this committee. It's like getting your doctorate every day, almost. All right. Okay. Problem is, like your computers is finding storage for all of it.
All right.
At least my problem. But okay, moving on.
Moving on to page 44 to our brand inspection unit.
And it's called brand inspection, although it several bienniums ago, the brand inspection and brand recording were combined, but it still has the title of brand inspection. So this does cover, this unit does cover both of those areas. Within that, we are looking here again at, we have the sources of funding, and if you calculate that out, it's not going to come out the 35-65 split, because our brand recording unit is 100% paid out of the brand fund. Our brand inspectors, the salaries, 35% is paid out of the general fund, and 65% is paid out of the brand fund, but then all of the supplies and those types of things, then it's taken out of a mostly brand fund, but some general fund dollars. Moving on to page 46, if you look at the revenue that has been generated there, when we start talking about the revenue stream for this brand fund, the revenue, total revenue generated for fiscal year 11 and 12, and that here again, the last biennium, was $7,375,760.86. The projected revenue right now for fiscal year 13-14 is roughly $7,670,000. So we still are having a very good revenue stream, and a good share of that revenue, remember, is coming off of our brand recording fees. The last time that we renewed brands was a year ago. We were in a brand renewal period. And with that brand renewal, we had a little bit over 6,000 brands that were up for brand renewal. So that is a revenue stream that is fairly constant. We actually renewed more brands than what our projected income was. So percentage-wise, we renewed more brands. The next brand renewal period, which will be coming up next fall, and then to be done by January 1st of 2015, we have over 9,000 brands that will be up for renewal. It will be the largest brand renewal period. So that is a huge revenue stream for us, and that remains, it's not every year, it's an every other year. So if you look at it, you have to look at it at a biennium basis for that revenue stream.
Senator Meyer.
I'm looking at the interest on the earmarked funds, and my question, that's in the trust and agency pool, I'm assuming, and could you corroborate that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I will have to defer to either Ann or to the budget office as far as the interest and how that works.
Well,
answer that question.
The reason, I'll give you a little background, and the reason I'm asking is that if it's in the agency pool, those interest rates have, you know, gone down because interest rates in the U.S. have gone down. And the question is whether or not you ever spend or dip into the corpus, or what's your actual need to dip into the corpus, because if you don't have the need to get into the corpus, we could possibly develop another fund or give some flexibility to the trust and agency pool to invest in the stock market and give you a higher return. And so I'm just wondering about, answering that in that vein as to whether or not it would be possible. How liquid do you have to have those funds that are invested in that pool?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, Ann just informed me that the auditor's office deposits into our fund every month, but as far as being able to set some of that aside, we are given the spending authority through this through the legislative body, and so we know what additional funds that we have. Now, I would say that we wouldn't want to invest 100% of those funds, but the other ones I would say could be maybe invested in that manner, and we wouldn't have to have immediate access to those. So we would know what our budgeting authority is going to be, and then with some cushion, because there's always a rainy day emergency type thing that may be needed. But I would say that we would have the potential of doing that if budget office and an audit would allow us to do that, and I don't know how that's set up.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I guess to answer your question, we'd have to make either a statutory or constitutional change to allow for that investing in the stock market, and it would be at a relatively small percentage. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
I'm trying to track the numbers on your revenues, Leanne, and you mentioned the $7 million, which would be on page 44 under special revenue, total agency request, $7.1 million. I think that's the number you're talking about. But then I turn to page 46 and 7, and I add up the revenues for 13, and we get about $4.7 million. And you said a lot of brands will be renewed in the next year, which means the 1.6 will go up higher. So I come up with a bigger number than you do, and I'm just trying to reconcile the differences.
Mr. Chairman and Senator B. Bowden, part of what we do in projecting our revenue for what we do, we are very conservative in our projections. And so what we project, and what we have a spreadsheet that does all the projection calculations, and we project 10% less in inspections each year, so a cumulative 10% less. So when we're doing projections, we're doing a much less. And so when we actually get into the reality of what we actually get, year after year, we've continued to actually increase the revenue instead of decreasing it. So our projections are very conservative. So that's what that's based on.
Okay. That was easy.
Yeah. Anything else? Okay, continue.
Okay, so going on to what our exception request, budget request is on the bottom of page 47, our number one priority with the agency, looking at our greatest assets are people who serve the producers and the livestock industry in that direct capacity, our number one priority is the tiered level of adequate salary and benefits. In looking at the classified staff, they're eligible for performance-based incentives, but our brand inspectors are not. Our brand inspectors are in a unique category. Although they're at-will employment contract employees, they are the only ones statutorily that are given the benefits of health insurance benefits and retirement benefits. But they're still in that situation where they are not in a tiered level system. They have been at the mercy of when there is turnover, what the amount that we could afford to pay them at that particular time. It's done on a contract basis, and there is a wide varying range of what those brand inspectors make. They have a description of what their responsibilities are within their contract. It specifies what their job function and responsibilities are. And so they're all expected to do a certain level of position job, but yet there is a very wide range. So unlike what we did when we went through the Hays study several years ago with our classification system and looking at like pay for like job, that is not the case currently with our brand inspectors. So there was a lot of time and effort that was put into developing this budget request, this exception request. Staff time was immense as far as what we requested, and the packet of information that we put together as that salary proposal was great. The board had a three-member budget committee, and they asked for a lot of information, and then that was presented to the board and approved as their number one priority. If you would take a look with me to that supplemental information that was provided to the committee, I believe in electronic and in hard copy form. It's the brand inspector salary adjustment proposal that was dated September 26, 2013. If you've each one of you've gotten that, the memorandum there, the final version served as a compromise on some of the issues, but it accomplishes the basic goals of what was set out to do. And those goals, there were four of them. Number one was to raise the people at the lower end to a level that hopefully will allow us to attract and retain our inspectors. Number two was to raise the market inspector's salary to a higher level then general brand inspector. Number three was to develop a proposal that is sustainable for the brand fund without fee increases. So we had sustainability with that brand fund. And number four was to offer a competitive salary and benefits package that will attract and retain the next generation of good brand inspectors. We have four brand inspectors that are over 80 years old. We have another four that are 76 to 80. And we have another, I think it is, eight that are 70 to 76. We have an aging that have served our industry and served our producers very, very well over that period of time. But I will tell you, in moving to computerization and a generational thing, I've been threatened by many of them that say, well, you know, this is going to be my time to leave, and I certainly don't want that to happen, and we will do everything that we can to get them up to speed, and it will be over a period of time. It's not going to be something that's going to happen overnight, even when we do get computerized. But we know at those ages and our aging population, our average age of brand inspector right now is 58. There is going to be a significant turnover as the next 5 and 10 years come around. We have got to be able to offer a competitive salary package to get good new brand inspectors to replace the ones who have been there for years and years. So in doing so, when you start looking at a competitive salary market and competitive what we can do, unfortunately, some of our new brand inspectors that we've gotten as turnover, some of the younger ones, haven't been able to stay. They can't feed their families on what they're doing. And the amount of commitment, particularly, and that varies from area to area. And I know that most of them have additional jobs. Most of them have additional income. They couldn't make it on what we're paying them per month. But it gets harder and harder to have a part-time job on the side when the demands of this job are so great and the responsibility is so high. You see what they're bringing in for income. You see what the number of cattle that they're actually returning to their rightful owners. As many of those brand inspectors explained to me, they are astray pickers. They are picking those astrays and making that additional producer money. They're pulling them out and finding those. So they have a large responsibility to the industry, and so therefore I think that we need to make sure that we do right by them. So that was part of what was put together in this salary proposal. If you look at it, what we tried to do, and in discussions, many discussions that we had, we tried to come up with a tiered brand inspector system that says that we've got a brand inspector in training, and then we looked at a salary range of what that could be. And here again, trying to target what 91% of that would be for most, that would be the starting salary for brand inspectors. After a two-year learning curve, or roughly 2 years into their next contracting period, we'd be looking at a full brand inspector category that would be looking at an additional salary increase then in moving to that with those increased duties of not having as much supervision there working on operating on their own. The market inspectors that serve the state, we only have four livestock markets left in the state of Wyoming to market our livestock. Those market inspectors are tied to those markets much more than those ones that serve the ranch community. The ones that serve the ranch community and do those country inspections can schedule, and they schedule their own time. But the ones that are at the markets are at the mercy of when those markets are, and then they additionally do then those ranch inspections on top of that. So they are limited even more so and getting a part-time job in order to be able to make ends meet. Then we were looking at doing an assistant supervisor position in addition to our district supervisors. Right now we have a district supervisor level. But if something happens, and here again, those district supervisors, if they have a health issue or a family issue and need to be gone, they need to have somebody that's there in that assistant capacity ready to step in and be able to do that oversight and that supervision of those brand inspectors and do the bookwork, the auditing of what they needed to do. So we wanted to make that assistant district supervisor level. And then, of course, we have our part-time brand inspectors, and we have roughly 60 part-time inspectors that are scattered all over, and those inspectors only get paid by the hours that they actually work. So
they're only paid. So we have some inspectors who don't work the months of May through August, but then in the fall and the spring, they are very, very busy, but they only work by the hour and get paid then just for their time that they're using. Then in that packet also, it shows the age of the inspectors. It shows the turnover rate that we've seen, and since in 2013, at that point, we had only had two left. We've had a couple more since that point in time, so our percentage is up higher. Then in that packet, as far as the proposal, there is a salary comparison, and it shows what the current salaries are in comparison to what some of the classified salaried positions are. And if you look right now at where our inspectors are, the lion's share of them are sitting at either the office support, receptionist, or mail clerk or below as far as what they're getting paid. And then we have some of them that are up with a correctional officer and a brand recorder. But then I threw in there on that as we were doing this, we put the weights and measures inspector to give an agriculture comparison to what some of the other inspectors are doing out there. The next page on that, page 10, shows the brand inspector proposed salary comparison. So with what our proposed salary is and moving them up, meeting all of those four goals that I identified at the beginning, it shows what these figures are represented. But that does not include the salary adjustment for any classified staff. So as classified staff get a salary adjustment, then that will here again change. Going on to page 11, this is simply put in here to show individually what each one of those inspectors are making currently as an actual monthly. You'll see that there are a list of vacant positions up at the top. That was what was vacant at the time that this was put into developed when we developed it last summer. And so this shows that some of those monthly salary is actually going to decrease. That's because some of those inspectors who left were making more than what a starting salary would be. So looking at that, there's high, great variability. We have a person there that's been here for 3.7 years at that point in time that was making $1,700 a month. So granted, that person is going to get a large salary increase in going to this tiered level system, and some of the others are not going to get as high of an increase in order to do so. Then looking on one of the real key pieces of this is page 14, and this is what our brand projections are as far as our fund income and our revenue stream. Here again, as I will tell you, we base our projections on a 10% decrease cumulative from year to year for revenue stream, and then we also have increased or put into that expenses as far as what the computerization is and everything else. Although we're projecting at the top there in our revenue 10% less, you'll see in that next set of figures there that we're actually, based on the projections, is 10% less, yet the actual shows over an 8-year period of time we were 14% up on our revenues. So we are still continuing to do that and increase our revenues, even with the livestock numbers being down. And then at the bottom there is the brand fund balance history. And many of you were here in those years when the brand fund was not solvent at the end of 05 and 06. We were actually $353,000 in the hole, and then we started building, and through the efforts of the people who served on the brand task force and the support that the agency and the brand inspectors received, the fees were set, and that has actually increased, and we are continuing to grow that brand fund, and we want to use this toward our greatest asset to reward them and keep them and stabilize the growth of that fund. So we don't want to grow that fund. We want to make sure that we maintain that fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kocha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the thing that's missing in this is numbers. And the numbers have gone down substantially. And so the revenues are going up and the numbers are going down, which has to do with fees and some of those things. But if you look at what you had to do when we were back 4, 5, 6 years ago when we had, you know, 2.5 million cattle and 800,000 sheep, and we had the same. My question is, Do we have the same number of brand inspectors doing all of those inspections? And now today we've got substantially less, so it's just a matter of workload. What were the number of people we had in 4 and 5 when the numbers were high? And I know it's up and it's down, but to try to get a range and how much, and I think we're at 90 some today. What are those numbers?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, that's a good point. We had more inspectors at that period of time, and I'll have to defer to Lee Romza in order to give the exact numbers. We have given up several of those positions, and we have several positions that are open right now, so we are not fully staffed, particularly with the part-time. But what those numbers of livestock are showing is that we are projecting 10% less livestock each year, and we haven't seen that decrease in the percentage as far as the number of inspections. And part of that reason that we see that that's not correlated is because of that the brand recording is the lion's share of the income on there. The brand inspections, but even though our brand inspectors, we haven't decreased the numbers as the same as we have with the livestock. If they go out to Rancher X and they were inspecting 500 head of livestock, Rancher X may be down to 300 head of livestock, but they're still making that same number of miles and that same number of trips. They still have the same number of miles to cover. They have the same number of inspections. The number of inspection forms has not gone down with the same. And then we've also increased our number of horse inspections. Not significantly. Our lion's share is the cattle, but the numbers have still not had as much impact on our numbers as far as our revenue as what you might think and is what it's showing to us.
And I understand that argument, Mr. Chairman, and you travel 60 miles and there's only 2 loads of cattle that are moved out instead of 5 loads, so that number, but you still have the overall, and what I'd like to have is the number of inspections, herd size relative to people like 6 or 7 years ago, and then herd size people today. And I understand that the travel thing, I understand that part of it, but I'd still like to have that number.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, if I can ask one question on that, do you want that specifically for cattle inspections?
No, for inspections.
Just
general.
Overall inspections
if it's
in
easy
general.
Enough, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, if it's easy to do it for sheep and cattle, that's fine, but I don't think you break that down internally, and maybe you do. I don't want to create a lot of work. I just want to know, the herd size, inspections, a trend, and then herd size, inspections, and number of inspectors.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, we did have 104 inspectors before we started to see the downturn in numbers, and 64 full-time and 40 part-time, and then we've gone down into the 90s from that. We have 60 full-time positions, and I think we're at 34 part-time positions.
Okay. Still provide that, would you please?
Yes.
Thank you.
And Ms. Senator Bebout, Mr. Chairman, one other thing on the revenue side, as the director has said, that when we went through the task force, a lot of the revenue that we've built up the earmark to fund has come through the renewal process. The renewal rates were at $80 for a 10-year period, which were quite modest, and now they're at $300 for a 10-year period.
Yeah, some of us were really excited about that, Mr. Chairman.
That sounds like it. Okay. I think Senator Meyer has a question.
A few questions, actually. Benefits, both health and retirement, do they only inure to the full-time inspectors?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, yes, the full-time are just like state employees. They get that benefit. And the part-time, are given the option. They have to pay it for themselves if they so choose to participate.
And now, I think we're going to a 30-hour part-time week now. When you have these part-time inspectors that working at a sale barn that might be putting in much more than 30 hours a week, during those months, I'm not sure what the consecutive months are, but I don't know if you're going to fall into a situation where if you have three consecutive months of more than 30 hours a week, that you're going to have some benefit obligations. And so we need to probably sort that out as these changes occur, especially on the federal level and also on the state level. So maybe give us a update on that as you become more aware and we become more aware of the changes and some of the thresholds that may change for you, I guess, accepting those obligations. The other thing is that looking at your salary schedule, one of the things that we look at is comparing it with the private sector, because one of the last things we want to do is make the government jobs so rich that the folks that we're actually working for in government can't afford the employees. I see the lowest schedule here is about 46.8 with benefits and retirement, and it goes up from there. I'm just wondering, do you think 46.8 is an entry level position for most farm and ranch hands or people that work in the feedlot or the cattle industry?
Go ahead,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer. I think that it may be a little bit high as far as that entry level for a feedlot or a ranch hand per se. But I think the difference in my mind where I see that it's a real difference is the amount of money and the amount of responsibility and the paperwork and following through with that. So they're more on the ranch manager side of it than they are on the ranch hand side of it because of the responsibility and the money situation that they have. And speaking back to your benefits with the part-time, that's a very good point, and I will tell you that our contracting for our at-will employment contracts for the brand inspectors, it comes up again this year, and we have been in conversations with the Human Resources as well as the Attorney General's office. Right now, all of those at-will employment contracts are considered to be exempt employees. They're not getting the overtime and that type of thing because of the situation of the contracted services, the service that they're providing, and that variability in the demand for their services. And so those are some of the things that we're taking a look at with the labor laws, with the health laws. And so I'm not sure we're going to be liking what we're hearing, and we may have to come back and take a harder look at that and may have to make some changes in order to continue providing the same services and the way that we look at that. So we are still in that discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and just a question on page 10 of your handout. And if you look at your exception requests, and I'm just punching in the numbers on the calculator, the governor didn't grant it all to you. It looks like about two-thirds of what you asked for. So you have those darkened lines there on page 10 where your proposal would move your brand inspectors. Obviously, the governor's, that's on your request, not on what the governor has put forward.
Correct.
So that changes that substantially. We were moving folks out of the free and reduced school lunch with your proposal. Yeah, not so much with the governor, perhaps. Okay. Any other questions? So I have us on page, and actually, kind of had scheduled to be finished up now. We're just going to keep on trucking here until we work this budget. So I have us here on page 49 and 50. Is there any other questions in or anything else that folks have on this priority one? What you can see, the governor recommended about two-thirds. And so that overall salary increase that you requested is how much as a percentage generally?
Percentage generally, I haven't done the math to calculate it out as far as the overall percentage,
My understanding of what the governor's recommendation was is to honor what the same as he's doing with classified salaries staff. And so our percentage would be another third again as high as that. Part of, I think, where there's some question as far as the differences of how the brand inspectors have been treated with salary adjustments in the past and the way classified staff. And there was some discussion earlier as far as that the brand inspectors had received every salary adjustment as well as classified staff, and that is actually not to be the case. That since 2004, and we had a task force that was looking at things, but in 2004, when classified staff received a 3% raise, the brand inspectors received $75. In 2005, classified staff received a 3% external cost adjustment. Brand inspectors didn't receive anything. 2006, classified staff 3.5%. Brand inspectors didn't receive anything. In 2007, that was as a result of the task force. The 5.5% that the classified staff got, the task force outcome was to give full-time staff or full-time brand inspectors $450 increase, and the part-time to go from $11 to $12 an hour. In 2008, when there was a 4% external raise for classified staff, the brand inspectors did finally receive that 4% raise. But then in 2009, when the additional 4% came, the brand inspectors did not receive anything. So that's been the history. So they have gotten further and further behind, and so trying to look at it with what putting them now with the classified staff, we don't feel is appropriate, and we think we need to do a bigger adjustment for them. So percentage-wise, I'm sorry that I did not figure that out.
Mr. Chairman. And could you just provide the committee with that what that history that you were just reading to us, just so we have it to refer to?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, absolutely.
That'd be good. And perhaps throw in that kind of percentage change over that time and in that comparison.
Mr.
And
Chairman.
I think is this Representative Moniz and Senator Meyer will be presenting these budgets on the floor. That'll be part of the information they're going to need. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand these full-time brand inspectors are unique in state government, I think, as the only AWACS that do actually get benefits. Why? What's the history behind that? Why are they not just classified as regular state employees?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, some of the differences, the reason that they choose and they absolutely do not want to be considered state employees and classified, and that it would be a real impact to our budgets to do so, is because they are at the mercy of when they get called for an inspection. So making them be classified staff and work a 40-hour work week when there's not work to do there in the summertime, but yet in the fall when they work 120 hours and yet they're considered then exempt employees so they don't get overtime pay, it's the equaling out over the entire year of that average of 40 hours a work week. And so as classified staff, we would end up in a real big situation where we would need a lot more brand inspectors because they wouldn't be able to work the number of hours that they are working right now. So they're providing a service in that contract capacity.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Is there a any type of documentation that the brand inspectors, the full-time ones particularly, but all of them keep in terms of the number of hours they work each week and each month, and so that we can see what that is? I mean, my experience is that some brand inspectors work a lot, some of them don't work very much. And so is there any tabulation of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, yes, they do have to turn in, that is part of the documentation that they have to turn in. Here again, it is all in paper format, so to compile it very easily, it always becomes a challenge, but we do actually get that in, and we do have that information.
And, Mr. Chairman, do you have summaries of it over the past years on particular brand inspectors, and do you do any authentication to see if it's paperwork or how they if they accurately document their time or how they record it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, we do look at that every month, and is looked at, is not kept on an inspector basis. It's when we do our summation reports for the end of the year, it's done by district. So we do have hours as far as what, how many hours are attributed to each category area, whether it be the kind of the paperwork, whether it be to the collection of the beef council fees, whether it be to driving, doing actual inspections, whether, you know, it's broken down, safety efforts, whether they go out and help the highway patrolman get livestock off the road. So all of that is captured in what they send in on a monthly basis. But here again, the summations are done by more by district.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions on this exception request? Okay, moving on. I think the next one is number priority 2, page 50. Travel?
Yes, in priority 2, the adequate travel in-state, here again, a big portion of our budget goes to mileage. And so what we have done in the past, as we pay out that mileage, many times at the end of the biennium, we have to ask to B11 to get the authority to spend some more funds out of that brand fund in order to pay the mileage. So what we are asking in this request is to increase the amount that we're actually given the spending authority for that adequate travel in-state. And in recognition of the brand inspectors and the amount that they travel and how much they are getting paid, the board does approve what that travel rate will be. And they have approved that now to raise the mileage rate to the currently established state rate and continue with an equal to status. Before, they were below that state rate, and they would grant them, and they would increase it a penny to try to be equal to the state rate, or below the state rate a penny, and then the state rate would increase. So now they are going to fluctuate until the board determines that they want to change that. They are now going to be equal to status, and we just recently got the notification that in January that will be going down a half a cent, but that will make a difference to that brand inspector mileage then. And so we are asking to be able to have the spending authority to make that budget so we don't have to come back biennium after biennium and ask for additional amount of spending authority for the mileage.
Okay, and that wraps up then brand inspection. Any other questions? I think next now is predator control fees. Looks like standard budget, no exception requests.
Yes, the standard budget is there. Here again, that's pass-through funds. We do receive a 5% administrative fee that we keep for the administrative purposes, and those are passed through funds to the county predator boards.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, next. That's it. I'm typing still, so. Okay, I'm at the 5%. Okay, are there any other questions or anything? Representative Moniz or Senator Meyer is gone, so they'll certainly contact you, and you have your kind of the homework list for. Okay, well, we appreciate all your good work. It's been a busy year for you, and probably don't anticipate callbacks. You never know. If not, Merry Christmas.
All right.
We'll see you sometime
thank you very
in the
much.
New year. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee.
Thanks, Liam.
Okay, we'll take a short stretch. The JAC stretch is about, we say, 5 minutes. Okay, thank you. Let's get started. We should be 11 o'clock right now. We're a little behind. So we're in good shape. So Agency 39, Wildlife Natural Resources Trust, Director Bud is here. And you can certainly introduce your team, and we'd, any opening comments you'd like to make. And then generally we will just like to kind of go through page by page, not many pages, but page by page, and any questions for members. Now, I think Representative Esquivel and Senator Dockstetter will be presenting your budget on the floor, so I want to make sure they have all their questions answered and any of that kind of information. So welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. With me today are the chairman of the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust Board, Kim Floyd, and I did bring the entire staff of the agency, myself and Christine Adams, who's the grants manager for the program. Introductory comments, I'll keep them fairly brief. We took to heart the directives that we got from the legislature and from the governor, and we came back with a zero-based budget, if you will, maintained. We did not add it. We didn't ask for any exceptions. There were some things we did in the adjustments a year ago to achieve the reductions. As we did that, we tried to do things that would actually go away and not be something we'd come back and chip back and try and get in. I think we were successful in doing that. There aren't any real exciting changes or anything that is radically different from the way that we've been operating as far as the operations side. And then on the grant side, the governor has made a request for $10 million for project funding. That's to cover the shortfall that is there as a result of the fund being about half what the legislation called for it to be, and $5 million to go into the corpus of the account. That's the only exception request, and those were put in by the governor's office after conversation with where we thought things needed to be to keep us whole. That will put us about on a par with what we've been doing in terms of grants. The board met yesterday in Casper and did our second granting period. The total for this year is going to be right at $10 million, which is about where we've been for the past 3 years for projects. And we'll end up with 80-plus projects for the year. So that's a pretty standard. We've done over 400 projects, almost 500 in 8 years. And that works out, the math works out there. We're running about 80 projects a year that are approved by the board. With that, Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything else to add. You have the 600 series, which shows all of the projects that have been paid out or the payments on them, and the 900, which is minimal, at least for the last year of the biennium. And if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
What... Now, and I think it's in there, the fund is like the trust is about $98 million or just shy of $100 million?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. And then what's the what's actually in your income fund today, unobligated?
Mr. Chairman, the unobligated today will be about $8 million, I believe, is where we're at after yesterday in the allocations that were made there. That I would remind you that as you look at the calendar year, which is how we present it generally to the public, we always have to keep in mind that we're working within a fiscal year. So of that eight, I would anticipate you'll see in the spring cycle remaining in this fiscal year, we'll probably spend another 3 to 4 on projects. So the unobligated at the end, net at the end of the fiscal year, is in the $4 million range.
Okay, so you just met yesterday. You said how many, what was the dollar amount, number of grants awarded yesterday?
Mr. Chairman, we had the dollar amount was $8.2 million. The number of grants yesterday was 38 that were successfully awarded.
Okay. Good. Any other questions? Representative Stubbs.
Mr. Chairman, Director Budd, just wanted to ask you about the 900 series. The handout that you gave us, if I can find it, showed like $970 or something like that. and yet the budget shows 72,000 or so. And maybe there was some in the first year of the biennium that doesn't show up on the report. Can you just tell us where the connection is between those two?
Mr. Chairman, we have always remitted money back in the 900 series. The 900 series for us, again, we're a very small agency. There are two people. We have, to date, almost 500 contractual obligations with people to perform for services for the state of Wyoming. That 900 series is primarily there in the event that we have to go out and do a remediation or do a correction or do an action if something is not done correctly. So it's not one where we anticipate that we're going to spend that, but as soon as we don't have the ability to get the engineers, the contractors, whatever we might need to correct a situation, that's what that fund has primarily always been set up for. The expenditures that were in there are incidental minor expenses that belonged in 900 as opposed to one of the other series.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Have you ever had to dig into that to do those sort of remediation type projects?
Mr. Chairman, we have had to use that series one time in the 8 years that we've been operating. The other purpose for that, and we will use probably 10,000, I'm going to guess, of that this year, is in tracking the work that's been done. And again, a small agency, we do not have GIS capability, nor do we have professionals. So we'll contract that work done so that if someone comes in and says, what have we done? And a specific example, we're dealing with reporting back to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service relative to sage-grouse conservation. One of the metrics they use is acreage that you've been able to enhance, protect, otherwise keep from being lost. That's a metric we need to be able to have from the state. That's particularly important for this agency because the statutory authority that is being used by the feds in many cases to show that we have a commitment to that is the statutory authority to create this agency, which talks about preservation of agriculture, habitat, and those kind of things. So it all ties into a fit there. But that would be the other type of expenditure that we have used the 900 for.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to find, Bob, on your budget, how much of your revenues come just from the interest income of your fund?
Mr. Chairman, ballpark about $4 million, and it'll range from about 3.8 to 4.2 in most years. I think
it says $8 million, Mr. Chairman, $8 million other funds, so that would be the two-year estimate of your revenues from your permanent fund. I think Mr. Chairman said it's almost $100 million. Is that correct?
Senator Bebout, yes, that is correct.
Okay. Is there any way you can quantify how much of the projects, you know, one of the things that we've talked about, without getting into the debate on easements and perpetuity and all of that, but one of the things that you had discussed before, and I wanted to see if you can quantify, is the sage-grouse side of what you're doing. Is there any way that you can look at the 32 projects that you just did and how many of those would be related to wildlife habitat / sage-grouse? Is there any way you can quantify that, or is that pretty hard to do?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, that's actually relatively easy to do, and we do a tracking. We have not tracked, other than for reporting to the federal government each year, that as a metric in the way that we report in our annual report, which you'll receive in January. But what we do is we track based on river projects, wetland projects, rangeland enhancements, conservation easements, water development, fence. So we have those eight categories. Within that, we flag each one that's a sage-grouse project. Well over half of the projects we have done in the last 2 years are sage-grouse related, if you include the conservation easements. If you take those out, it's probably about 40% are still sage-grouse oriented when you look at water development, fence alterations, rangeland enhancements in particular, those type of projects. The bulk of those are aimed at sage-grouse right now.
And Mr. Chairman, if your funding was reduced some amount of money, could you fast forward that so in the next biennium, say $10 million, no say there were no general funds, into your program, only your funds that come from your trust fund, would you see a corresponding decrease in the amount of sage-grouse-related projects? So if you were going to do, say, with that extra general fund money of $10 million, there were to be 80 projects, so 40% of those would probably be sage-grouse-related. Is that a fair assessment?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's a fair assessment today, yes.
Okay, thank you.
A little bit, Bob, on most of the conservation easements I've seen, or a good deal of them, has to do with establishing what you would call a migratory pathway. I wonder if there's a master plan of migratory pathways that identify the migratory pathways in the state. I think there's a big one right up there by Representative Berger's backyard with all the deer going through there. I just want to know that if we've already established conservation easements that gives you a contiguous migratory pathway, that we're not using conservation easements to do the ranches on each side of it if we've already established that by conservation easements. It's trying to figure out what the master plan is and whether you've even looked at a master plan as far as the overall picture of what you're trying to do. I mean, you have goals and you want to move in this direction, but have you ever looked at this as point A and we want to go to point Z?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, there are a number of different analyses that have been done, and there's an effort right now to aggregate those into a database that would be inclusive of all the different pieces. There's some pushback against that because of how it might be misused, but in general, we have a fairly good understanding of most of the major migratory routes in the state. That's come about in probably the last 8 to 10 years. Now, that much said, they aren't. We tend, and I'm no different than anyone else. We tend to think in terms of a migratory route, as we would a highway to get from Rock Springs to Jackson. The animals respond to weather conditions differently, with some exception. If you look at the Upper Green, where those antelope migrate in and out of Jackson Hole down a very narrow corridor, those pinch points obviously are crucial. When they hit the bottom at the Green, where it comes out and hits the valley floor, they may use a 20 or 30 or 40 mile swath of land to get to where they're going for the winter, which may be just north of Rock Springs. So as those migratory routes funnel down into an area where they fan out and there's large numbers of animals, they get less defined. The ones that we have focused on do, I think, more exactly what you're talking about, which is ensure that you don't put an impediment in a spot where suddenly you cannot physically get from point A to point B. The others we tend to look at a little differently. The other routes that are important may be used differently by different species. So if you go into the Hoback, those animals will migrate down, hit the Green, some will stay on the west side, some will cross over to the east, and then they'll disperse, some go down into Kemmer and Evanston country, and then work their way back up. So you actually end up with multiple routes. Again, the key there, generally, when we're looking at a migratory project, is do you have a pinch point or a point that's going to be an impediment to those animals getting back and forth from where they need to go? I hope that answered your question, but that's really what we do look at.
Mr. Chairman? Follow up?
Oh, yeah.
Bob, could you develop a map of where the easements are that are in those areas, and so we kind of have an idea, a blue highlight on them that says, yeah, okay, these are already taken over by conservation easements, and whether there's actually any areas that we need to focus on or other areas. I'm just looking at really like the allocation of capital. Thinking that if we know what we actually have there, and you've worked one area over pretty good, and you got all the pinch points, but you don't have a pinch point someplace else, that maybe we let the the delta for, you know, alone for a while after that pinch point and go to the other areas. And so, you know, just as a way to allocate capital, I still get heartburn when I see $15 million of Vianium going out of general fund every year. And the question I'd have is that if part of this, if you had your druthers, could you rather have part of this go into your permanent fund of the $15 million? Is there any part of that $15 million you'd like to see go in the permanent fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, there's not only part of that I'd like to see go in the permanent fund. There's another $85 million we could use in the permanent fund. But
it wasn't the softball, Mr. Chairman, but he hit it out of the park.
But let me address your specific question. The board really does look at that, and so when we find out that we've got a priority area, the focus of the board's funding will go there, and other things that are a lesser priority will either be funded at a lesser amount, and the proponent will have to find those funds elsewhere, or it will move to another funding phase. Relative to conservation easements, I think I've told this committee a year ago and 2 years ago, we were hitting the peak of what we were going to see for conservation easements. If you'll recall the large project bill last year, we had 19 total projects. 15 of those were conservation easements. I know now today, after yesterday's meeting, we will have a large project bill this year that will have 15 large projects. 4 will be conservation easements. So I want you to know that I wasn't lying to you, nor was I trying to mislead you. We could see where that peak was, and we're now dropping down the other side of that to where the focus of our efforts now on the sage-grouse side is on habitat restoration and on enhancement of habitats where we have birds. On the other side, the big number of projects are river restoration, river reconstruction, and associated wetlands. So I think that's where you're going to see this go for the next probably 2 to 5 years, is way more habitat-oriented. We hit that bubble of easements driven by the sage-grouse issue. That's starting to ebb back, and I think that's what you're going to see.
Thank you. So anyway, and just wanted to be clear, is the Wildlife Trust Fund, when it was fully funded, was it $200 million? Is that the number?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, the statute says calls for a minimum of $200 million,
okay,
which was the goal that was anticipated in 2005.
And Mr. Chairman, the one other thing is, I just want to go back on the I think there was a case in Johnson County a couple years ago when it was about the conservation easement and there wasn't a holder and the holder got lost and ultimately the conservation easement disappeared. And I'm just wondering if you guys have looked at that and figured out how that affects you, or if it does, or what we've done so that doesn't happen with the easements that the Wildlife Trust is holding.
Mr. Chairman, that is a good question, Senator Perkins, and we did follow that Johnson County case. I actually followed, and I need to say, full disclosure here, that I'm always cautious when the attorney asks the cowboy some question about the law. So if I answer incorrectly, feel free to correct me. The safeguards that we have are every easement we do has to be reviewed by the Attorney General. And they do that very diligently. Their primary objective in looking that is to make sure that the state does not get itself set up to where something like that could happen. So we have full recapture ability in our contracts and in our statute. We also have full ability to go in and take that over if need be. So if a group went in and suddenly said, well, now we're not going to follow the purpose for which this money was granted, not only do they owe us the money back, they also could lose the easement to the state, and they agree to that. The difference that I could tell you, again, this is where I'm treading my boots carefully in the legal arena, is that easement that was done in Johnson County was a very anomalous easement in the sense that the county agreed to hold it as opposed to a qualified land trust or governmental entity that was qualified to hold easements. And I think that drove a lot of the angst and a lot of the discord that led to the decision that ultimately came out. We would not do that. We would be absolutely certain that whoever has it is qualified to hold it by the IRS, by the state, and by other entities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I may have missed it Director Budd, generally there's some type of handout that gives us a list of the projects, what we have, what we're working on. And it'd be nice, too. I know it's, what'd you say, 400 projects or so? Nice to have a comprehensive list. The other thing, the co-chair of the Senate asked for something related to sage-grouse. Would it be possible to connect the projects that are related to sage-grouse for our quick reference? That'd be possible.
Mr. Chairman, I will get both of those to you. I have the comprehensive list, and I apologize for not bringing that. I didn't want to burden you with a ton of data today. Normally, in the report that I submit to the legislature, you will get that report as well as last year's activity report, and I will do, Senator Bebout asked, and break out what are the sage-grouse projects from day one to today, and I can do the other if you'd like as well.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple things, Bob. And I remember when we were in Lander, we had a great meeting when I was on that select committee. And we talked about the federal estate laws and how it was set up at a timing. So the first question is, has there been a change in the laws at the federal level for estate planning that might have an impact one way or the other? And then also there was a fund that was available that the feds had funded that would utilize to help with, you know, to get our numbers up so we could, you know, actually leverage our dollars more. Is that fund still available, and to what extent are we even using it anymore? That's my first question.
First question, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, as far as I know, the federal estate laws have not changed radically and changed the way that easements are handled. Of course, everyone is individually different. And I would honestly defer to Senator Perkins, who deals with that as a professional, to answer a detailed question about it. The second question relative to the fund from the feds, there are actually three different funds there that deal with easements. One is called the Grassland Reserve Program. That's 100% funded by the federal government. It's on a formula base, not an appraisal basis. Some people opt for that. There's one in your county that was done last year. The McKinney Ranch that actually did that, chose that route. They work better in areas where you don't have real highest real estate values. The second is the Farm and Ranch Protection Program, which is the primary one used in Wyoming. Anticipating the farm bill, obviously, is very difficult to do. My guess would be you'll see a farm bill very close to what has been in the past. That would probably bring somewhere $4 to $5 million total to the state in any given year. That lays with the, you know, the number of easements, the declining number of easements. The big account which you referenced was the Sage Grouse Initiative, which was an infusion of capital from Congress through the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and that's where the $60 million came to Wyoming specifically tied to sage grouse projects. The bulk of that money has been obligated, and that's the projects that you were looking at in 2011, 2012, and early this year in 2013. So we're on the downward slide of that particular fund. We'll see a radical decrease in the amount of funding coming from the feds for easements.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's what I thought was going on. And then so that huge decrease in that $60 million fund for the sage grouse, how is that going to impact utilization of the Wildlife Trust Fund for sage grouse habitat, because it was a big part of the matches? Is that going to have a negative effect on us in terms of projects that you do?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, the project money will remain about the same. The difference will be in the money that was specifically focused to Farm and Ranch Protection Program for easements. That's what will be reduced.
Right.
If the farm bill remains intact, I think you'll see this same or perhaps even an increase in EQIP, which is the on-the-ground funding, wildlife habitat programs, WIP they call it. Those types should remain fairly stable, and there are other sources now that are being mobilized specific to sage grouse through U.S. Fish and Wildlife and through some other agencies as well.
Okay. Another question, and Bob, you'll have to help me out on this one. It's just more or less it's almost like a coffee shop talk where there was some particular situation where the trust fund was utilized, matches were utilized, and it was set up to be a certain use, and that's the way the whole project was, one of the projects that you did. And then I think either the owner of it, who was not an individual, but I can't remember. But anyway, it never got to where it wanted to be, and it was sold, and there was a profit involved in it and all that. Am I talking about something you're aware of, or maybe this is something that I need to talk to you about privately? Are you aware of anything like that? What I was getting is that it was set up to do a certain thing, and it was abused, and the money was utilized to enhance in a certain way, sold for profit money, and then they moved on. Have you heard about anything like that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, I don't know specifically one that happened that way. I do know of two or three in which our site visit process, which we, two of us, whether it's a member, myself, or staff and another member or two members of the board, go look at every project on the ground. We go through their numbers at the kitchen table. We had one where we had funded an enhancement to the river on that ranch, and then they, prior to doing the enhancement, put it on the market and marked it up 20% because they were going to get this money to do the enhancement. We rescinded that. But I don't know the other, and I'd be happy to talk to you about it.
Mr. Chairman, we don't need to take any more time. I'll try to get some more information on that. The last thing is on the sage-grouse. If there was, whether it was $1 or $10 or $10 million, is in your opinion, I'm asking you, wearing your hat as you know, being involved in the sage-grouse implementation plan, because you're so much aware of that, and you really lived with that from day one. Is there any other way or better way that, you know, if you looked at the generation of funds that might facilitate what we're trying to accomplish with the, you know, the Endangered Species Act and fish and wildlife in that area? And I'm thinking about maybe the game and fish doing something differently, and I don't know if there is anything differently. Have you thought about that?
Mr. Chairman, the sage-grouse team met last week in Casper, and that is one of the things that we've talked about. The primary focus that the state of Wyoming has right now will rest on three metrics that I believe will be determined whether or not the species is listed. Those three metrics, and I believe they're correct. I have a meeting this afternoon with Fish and Wildlife and the BLM to hopefully do the last draft of those metrics. Most people want to talk about populations, bird populations, and say, oh, look, they're up, they're down, they're static, whatever they are. Sage-grouse populations will move 15 to 20% annually based on weather, based on predation, based on things we have no control over. So to use that number is absolutely incorrect. And I believe that most people would agree the two most important metrics are, do we have birds breeding in historic ranges? In other words, are the leks still active? Independent of whether it's 100 birds or 80 birds, are they still doing it? Secondly, what is your acreage that you have of habitat that's suitable and available to that species? So the focus I think you're going to see Wyoming on now is assuring that we maintain habitat. Dollars are important to that, obviously, because it's not easy to replicate or restore sagebrush habitats. The beauty of this is that if you couple it with things like the orphan well program that's being promoted now by the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, that coupled with efforts by industry on their own voluntarily, coupled with what we can do to come in through the trust and help, we can look at fairly large numbers of acres to where as we start to report to the feds, we're actually increasing habitat, not decreasing it. So the metric they're all looking at, oh, we're losing habitat, I believe in Wyoming today we are not losing habitat. We are actually holding our own and starting to gain habitat back.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Anything else? Okay. Anything else you'd like to share with us, Director?
Mr. Chairman, other than to say that we appreciate the partnership that this has evolved to, I don't think I have a lot. I was here, as many of you were, when it started. I know that there was a lot of skepticism. There was a lot of distrust and a lot of nervousness, and I hope that this board of citizens has shown that they're diligent and that they do pay attention, that you see that. I could not work for a better group of Wyoming citizens. Those nine people, they go all out every day and do a tremendous job, and we appreciate your support, sir.
Okay. Well, appreciate your good work as well and the work of the board. So Don't anticipate any callbacks. So, Merry Christmas and almost off the hook.
Almost,
Director.
Just before you go, Bob. thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the last couple of interims, you know, we've gone to the supplemental budget. How much have we kicked in the supplemental budget in the last, say, the last two biennia, if you remember?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I'm going to have to do this from memory. I don't believe we did any supplemental last time. We did not ask for any supplemental. The prior biennium, the second year, if I'm not mistaken, we did $5 million to the corpus of the trust, and we did $3 million for projects, because the way that we did that budget, they split the initial ask and funded the first year, and we came back for the remainder of the second year. But we have tried not to do supplemental requests, other than if the governor feels that there's, and obviously the legislature feels that there is a surplus that we can put into that savings of by putting them in the account, that's where most of any supplemental requests have come.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your presentation. Okay, members, we'll be back at 1 o'clock with State Parks and Cultural Resources.